Whether a vicar or an 89-year-old or indeed anybody else, if you're holding up a placard that is supporting a proscribed organisation, you are breaking the law of our land.
In a related story, former Manchester United and England star Gary Neville had these contentious views over flying the flag.
The division that's being created is absolutely disgusting. Mainly created by angry middle-aged white men.
In other news, a government initiative to try and make house buying easier, we'll tell you more on that, and a suspected arson attack on a mosque in Sussex, we'll have a full report. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, mediators are due to meet in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The latest diplomatic efforts come after Hamas agreed to parts of a plan put forward by President Trump. He's urged those involved to move fast, warning that bloodshed will follow if a deal isn't agreed. Speaking to the American broadcaster ABC, the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio echoed the president's call for urgency.
We're hoping it'll be finalized very quickly, early this week. And I'm hoping, you know, again, who knows the timeline, but this cannot take weeks or even multiple days. We want to see this happen very fast. If it doesn't, then I think the entire deal becomes imperiled. So this has to happen quickly.
The Conservatives will promise to reward work by giving young people a tax rebate of £5,000 towards their first home when they get their first job. The Shadow Chancellor, Samuel Stride, will make the announcement at the party's conference in Manchester later. The move will be funded by cuts to public spending worth nearly £50 billion over 5 years. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
The Tories say today they would save £47 billion and restore Britain's public finances if they win the next general election. That's the message from the Shadow Chancellor, Mel Stride, as he makes his big pitch to the party conference here in Manchester. The party say they will tackle the spiralling welfare bill, cut the bloated civil service and reduce foreign aid expenditure even further. Benefits would be stopped for people with low mental health problems and only British people would be able to access welfare.
Jaguar Land Rover is expected to resume some production in the UK this week as it continues to recover from a major cyber attack. The hack at the end of August led to a 6-week pause in manufacturing. Ministers have agreed to underwrite a £1.5 billion loan to support JLR and its supply chain. The government's proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of reforms to the home buying system. Changes include asking sellers for more information up front so buyers don't need to pay for searches and surveys. Ministers say first-time buyers could save £700 on average. And around 12,000 homes are still without power in Scotland after Storm Amy. Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks engineers are working to restore supplies. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 94.91. It closed up 63 on Friday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, rain in northern areas, sunny spells in the southeast, highs of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm off the screw thing. That's not level, mate. Oh, while you're here...
We know you have a lot to get through every day. Searching for low prices shouldn't be one of them. That's why Screwfix check prices daily on over 1,000 essentials and basics. Screwfix. Low price. Checked.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after seven, Monday, October the 6th. Was there ever any doubt, although the Prime Minister, the Home Secretary and just about everyone else involved asked if this weekend the demonstrators could just rest and respect mourning and grief that's being expressed by Jewish people, particularly in Manchester and around the country? Of course they didn't. The protests went ahead. Nearly 500 arrests as supporters took to the streets of central London, and that wasn't the only city. Now, a change in the law. We'll look at that in more detail and ask, why couldn't they have taken just one weekend off? Wouldn't it actually have improved their cause and their standing? Meanwhile, what seems to be the theme, doesn't it, whether it's Reform UK trying to kick them out, the government trying to take measures against them, now it's the Conservatives getting tough on migrants, telling the BBC yesterday...
They do not belong here. They are committing crimes. They are hurting people. I'm tired of us asking all of these irrelevant questions about where should they go. They will go back to where they should do, or another country, but they should not be here.
But where exactly will they go if that country doesn't want them? There didn't seem to be much detail on that. We'll come back to that. Suspected arson attack in an East Sussex mosque. It's important to say it is not just our Jewish friends who are feeling concerned for their safety now. It's our Muslim friends as well. We need to be aware of that. Let's also look at the story that there are more than two child deaths a week linked to cousin marriages. You may recall I aired this with Health Secretary Wes Streeting at the Labour conference in Liverpool last week.
First cousin marriages are high risk and unsafe. We see the genetic defects it causes, the harm that it causes.
And hope for the hostages and sadly the remains of some hostages. Well, here's US President Trump.
They're in negotiation right now as we speak. They've started the negotiation. It'll last a couple of days. We'll see how it turns out, but I'm hearing it's going very well.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
They chose comfort rather than combat, but was there ever any doubt? These protesters were always going to do that, despite the requests of the Prime Minister, the Home Secretary, police chiefs, and even some families involved. Would it really have hurt the cause? Now, of course, we want fair, peaceful demonstrations and protests in this country. That's one of the founding principles. Everybody agrees on that. But sometimes there's just something called respect, where you allow people in a certain faith just to have some time so that you don't take to the streets chanting the name of Palestine. And in some instances, I'm afraid, also chanting slogans that are very frightening to Jewish people. But of course, they were never going to stop, were they? And this, as I say, despite pleas from the Met and other police chiefs. Around 500 arrests in London, and these protesters told Channel 4 News...
I've never seen terror or violence as being helpful to resolving conflicts.
The British people will see that this is blatantly not terrorism. They can tell the difference between a Manchester attack and an old boy sitting on the pavement in London holding a bit of cardboard.
I can't not come because we're complicit. Our country is complicit by continuing arms sales.
Now, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood has acknowledged that British Jews are feeling let down by Labour and admit many feel frustrated by the government's failure to act earlier to restrict the wave of pro-Palestinian marches, almost a weekly feature now in some cities than those attacks 2 years ago tomorrow, by the way. And the anger of Jewish people was demonstrated on Friday afternoon. I take you back to then when the Justice Secretary David Lammy and Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy was heckled while he attended a vigil in Manchester to mourn the victims of last week's terror attack.
I have great pleasure in introducing our Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy. And before I do, please, we know how we all feel. We know how we all feel.
Go to Palestine! Shame on you!
A children's school was closed today. You have allowed this to happen.
You have blood on your hands!
You won't be particularly surprised that I know David Lammy quite well, not least because he was a presenter here on LBC. And while I'm sorry that he endured it, and he is a decent bloke, it's not solely his fault, but the government has to be aware, as do police forces or police services up and down the land. People are feeling frightened, and the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister, the Home Secretary have let them down. Period. End. It's that simple. But what about these demos? Well, back to the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, on the media round, talking about police will be given new powers to restrict such protests. Chief constables will be allowed to consider the impact of repeated demonstrations when deciding whether they should reroute planned marches, and in some instances, cancel them. Organisers who breach these conditions could face up to 6 months, a fine of up to £2,500 or both. Speaking with my LBC colleague, Lewis Goodall, the Home Secretary explained why she's changing the law.
I think we're seeing a number of different groups who are regularly protesting, and there is a cumulative impact of the disruption caused by those protests. There is a gap in the law. There is an inconsistency of practice. And I think it is my duty to make sure that the law is exactly where it needs to be to capture the behaviour that creates a balance between the right to protest, which is a fundamental freedom, against also public safety and wider concern.
Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood. Let's bring the conversation at 9 minutes after seven. Donna Jones, who's National Crime Justice Lead for the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners and is herself the Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Thank you for coming on. Commissioner, under what circumstances do you imagine you would support the cancelling of a demo? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, first of all, I do welcome what the Home Secretary said yesterday in giving police chiefs greater powers around protests. In terms of and what circumstances, let's be clear that this is not about cancelling a protest. The police actually do already have the existing powers to do that if there would be a significant risk of public order and a significant number of crimes likely to be committed, used very rarely, as we know. What the Home Secretary has announced would mean that where there is a cumulative impact of a protest, let's say it's in a particular location every week, some of them are two or three times a week, then the police have the ability to consider telling the protest group that they have to move to a different location. And that's to give some reprieve to the people that live immediately around that area, because for some people this is becoming very, very impactful if they live adjacent, for example, or if they live in one of these sites that are the subject of the protests.
Who will determine that the protesters would have to move on?
I think it probably done at a superintendent level or above. Ultimately, Chief Constable has the say there on that one. And the Chief Constables and Police and Crime Commissioners all had a letter sent to us from the Home Secretary yesterday where she lays out the purpose for doing this, which is to give, as I say, communities a reprieve. My biggest concern is not about moving a protest from one location to another. It's about the sheer scale and volume of the number of protests we're having in Britain at the moment and what that represents. I wrote to the then Home Secretary Yvette Cooper about 6 weeks ago, because in my area, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, we're one of the places where we have had protests every single week since Southport last year. And, you know, what that has cost. The month of August alone, for example, cost me £1 million in police overtime and resource because of policing the protests with our specialist public order trained police officers. They are absolutely stretched to the limit across the UK. Every force at the moment, the Met are asking for mutual aid on a weekly basis. The Freedom March on the 13th of September, they put out a national alert first thing in the morning asking for additional resource, to all other police forces. Our public order police officers are really stretched. I'm really concerned, and it is costing UK taxpayers millions of pounds every single week.
Well, the other way of looking at this, Commissioner, is that there are a number of causes or issues that are people upset about and they want to demonstrate about them.
That is absolutely fair enough, and
we can't have it both ways, can you? You're urging the then Home Secretary to look at perhaps restricting them, and then you're saying people can have those demos. Can it be both ways, Commissioner?
Well, no, I'm not asking. I haven't asked her to restrict them. I'm asking her to pay for them. That's the difference, Nick. I am a defender of freedom of speech, and I think people have a right to protest. It has to be balanced. It has to be lawful. And that is exactly what the police, thankfully, across the country in the vast majority of occasions are able to do. Clearly, we saw on Saturday a firm line taken with 493 people arrested from the Defend Our Juries group. 50% of those that attended ended up being in police custody. That is a significant strain for the Metropolitan Police.
I will leave it there, Donna Jones. Thank you for your time, Commissioner. National Criminal Justice Lead to the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners and is the Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. 13 minutes after 7. Listen to that is Tyrone Steele, who's the Deputy Legal Director of Justice, a charity working in the UK judicial system, joining me now. How supportive were you of the demonstrations that went ahead this weekend after the events at the synagogue in Manchester?
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Nick. So Justice doesn't take a view on particular protests. I think our concern is with the protest regime or public order regime more broadly. From our perspective, what we want to see, and I think what everyone wants to see, is proper appropriate regulations put in place which balance our fundamental rights and freedoms, the right to protest being a cornerstone, as you said earlier, also as well alongside with public safety and the safety of communities. Now, Nick, you all know very well from covering this issue over many years that this isn't a new innovation to amend the public order statute book. We've seen it, I think, four or five times already in the last 5 years, with new powers being introduced every single time, and clearly these don't seem to be enough in the view of the Home Secretary of the day. And I think the reason for that is because actually managing these protests and ensuring that we safeguard those freedoms and liberties is a complicated exercise, and it can't be done just by simply adding in a new law or passing a new statute. You need proper training on the ground in terms of the police forces, and also fundamentally approach which recognises the importance of the right to protest.
Measures such as this, the job you do with justice, how much do you think they threaten free speech in this country?
To be honest, Nick, I think freedom of speech is under threat at the moment across the board. I mean, let's take the one example in terms of the right to protest. I mentioned we've had multiple different changes to that right, restrictions on that right, I should say, over time. And this cumulative disruption proposal, whilst I understand the intention behind it, I worry that it risks turning the right to protest, that freedom to protest, into almost a kind of a rationed right. You know, like getting a drinks token at a party. You can use it once and then the next week, you know, that's it. You can't have another one. That's not how fundamental freedoms work.
Grateful for your time, Tyrone Steele, your Deputy Legal Director of Justice. And we'll come to your calls. Naji, you're going to be the first caller on that. Is this an assault on free speech? And this idea that they could move to cancel a demo if it had been taking part in a certain part of town, or city, I should say, time in, week out. Plus, in other news, a suspected arson attack on a mosque in East Sussex. This woman attends the mosque in Peacehaven.
This is our community, and we would like to see safety and right and fairness for everybody. I think we're going to stand our ground to defend the community safety and to defend our local communities.
Just shows how toxic the atmosphere is out there, doesn't it? 7:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has raised the pressure on mediators ahead of Gaza peace talks later, saying time is of the essence. The Shadow Chancellor, Samuel Stride, will promise to save $47 billion of taxpayers' money if the Conservatives win the next election. And Jaguar Land Rover is expected to resume some production at its UK factories this week following a major cyber attack in August. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, some outbreaks of rain in northern areas, sunny spells in the southeast, highs of 19 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. Also on the M25, there are delays clockwise to Junction 3 at the M20, and that's also after an accident. Queues of about 3 miles on the M11 southbound to Junction 5 at Louter. In Hampton, there are delays on Thames Street both ways after an accident, and a car's broken down on Hyde Park Corner, so that means it's very slow southbound on Park Lane. On the underground, there are now severe delays on the Victoria line, so it's back up and running. That was after that investigation. And there are still minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Whitechapel and Shenfield.
This is LBC.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
31 years ago, the World Wide Web was introduced. The National Lottery launched. And Darwood and Tanner began making people smile. And whilst things have changed a lot since then, Darwood and Tanner's mission to provide the very best dental care through the very latest technology is still at the heart of everything they do. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant, root canal and gum disease treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
The McDonald's breakfast wrap. We could give you a delicious description, but instead, we'll just say that you can now play the Monopoly game at McDonald's with a breakfast wrap. Go on, it's your go. Served until 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Game ends 21st of October. App may be required. 18+. UK. See mcbrewles.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 minutes after 7, Naji coming to you in just a moment. Quickly, the headlines that you're waking up to. Both The Times and The Guardian have the same first story, the ones that we're doing as well. Mahmood police could get power to ban protests, is The Times, or The Guardian. Anger over Vinicius' plan to give police more anti-protest powers. There's a story going on which we're keeping an eye on. I don't know yet whether it actually affects Mrs. Jones in Clapham, but people are getting very excited about whether the Prime Minister's security chief, Jonathan Powell, was involved in any way of the China espionage case that collapsed. I know you're probably going back under the duvet, but we will keep a close eye on that and see if it develops. The Daily Express tells us that Tories pledged to slash £300 billion cost of welfare, and it's money for the affront of the eye. Reeves look at budget tax hike on bank profits to raise billions. Quickly to the websites, the LBC app. This is the fast-moving aspect of the peace negotiations. Donald Trump warns Gaza peace talks must move fast. And let's take one at random. Oh, here we go. The front page of the Daily Mirror Online. This is Gary Neville. As I think, well, we are going to be telling you this, so we told you right at the top of the show. Don't use the flag to divide us. He says the symbol of pride has been hijacked to spread hatred. Is that what you see when you see the Union flag? We're going to look at that a little bit later in the show. But let's come straight to Naji. Naji, at what level, how much control should the government have, and police for that matter, over demonstrations? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Hope you had a good weekend. In principle, I think that police should have greater powers in light of kind of what we saw last weekend. I think, first of all, to deal with the public order implications, which, as we saw then, you know, clearly played out on the streets of London and Manchester on the Thursday night after following the attack. And secondly, where those protests that do take place appear to be continuing protests in support of a proscribed terrorist group. You know, beyond that, while I think, you know, you could certainly make the argument, as your guest did, that banning the protests would impinge on, you know, fundamental rights we all have in this country, I think both the government and the police were right to try and at least prod them into suspending the protest out of basic decency after what just happened, kind of both because they've exercised those fundamental rights on anywhere up to 103 out of the past 104 weekends, and also, for goodness sake, it wasn't just about your own moral compass, just your ability to recognise a basic resourcing issue for the police, who, you know, they needed to deploy immense amounts of extra resourcing to synagogues that day in immediate protection of the Jewish community. So yes, they should be allowed their rights, of course, but they must also be allowed their responsibilities.
I don't think those people who go on those demonstrations give a jot about the pressure that might be on local police forces. It's just for themselves, if ever there was a week. And I think, as I said at the top, Naji, I think their points, their position would have been strengthened if they said, out of respect to the mourning in Manchester, we're going to stand down this weekend. Thank you.
Completely agree. And if I can say one thing about those protesting in support of Palestine Action in particular, because they've been particularly kind of vocal in saying that they're being criminalised simply for holding up a placard. Mm. You know, expressions of support for a terror organisation, they can be verbal, you know, they can be shouted out, or that, you know, they can be written, whether on social media, and you know, yes, written on a placard at a protest. And I'd say that's probably one of the most likely scenarios the government would have envisaged when creating the offence of expressing support back in the, you know, the year 2000. So for these people to pretend they're somehow kind of being criminalised simply for holding up a placard at a protest is unmitigated nonsense. You know, children in secondary school would see the distinction between writing things on a placard and holding up a placard. So why can't you guys, as grown adults, you know, stop taking the public for a pack of fools?
Now, G, I sense you and I are on the same page here. Let's see if anyone, and I'd welcome the opportunity to discuss it with you, if you decided to attend the demo in London or in Manchester, and I know there were some other cities as well in the United Kingdom, why couldn't you take one weekend off? What do you not see that the impact would have been for? Because arguably you've not achieved anything by going out and having your demo this weekend. If you'd not done anything, people would say, wow, we can respect these folk. Naji, thanks for getting us started. More calls on that in a moment, 7:23. But let's go to a story. More details on the LBC app concerning this. President Trump threatening Hamas with complete obliteration if it attempts to retain power, as American and Israeli negotiators fly to Egypt, try to confirm a deal to release hostages and possibly end the war in Gaza. Speaking to reporters over the weekend about his 20-point peace plan, President Trump said he was hopeful those hostages could be freed.
It's a great deal for Israel. It's a great deal for the entire Arab world, Muslim world, and world. So we're very happy about
that. Thank you so much. When do you think the hostages will start being freed?
I think very soon. They're in negotiation right now as we speak. They've started the negotiation. It'll last a couple of days. We'll see how it turns out, but I'm hearing it's going very well.
Could he stand a little bit away from the helicopter? Would it really be so hard? Why does he always decide to shout? It's not his fault. Helicopters are noisy. Could the guy just not start it up when he got in? I know it takes a while to warm up. I understand it's not like a car, you just flick a switch. But you always have to battle to hear what... Anyway, we did hear what President Trump was trying to get across to Nomi Bar Yaakov, who's an award-winning peace negotiator and fellow at the Geneva Centre for Security Policy. Thank you very much for coming in, Nomi. What happens next, do you hope? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, what's happening is today in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, negotiations are commencing on the first phase of the ceasefire. That's the release of hopefully 48 Israeli captives, dead and alive, in exchange for 250 life sentence serving Palestinian prisoners and 1,700 Palestinian prisoners arrested after the 7th of October 2023. So that's the first phase, and that's what, and of course, a ceasefire and an unfettered, unhindered flooding of humanitarian aid, which is very much necessary, into the Strip, and then a gradual withdrawal of the Israeli army. That's the hope is that, as President Trump said, is that by the end of this week, the hostages will be back at home in Israel and the prisoners released. Whether he will manage to meet that deadline, I don't know.
Right.
But he's putting an awful lot of pressure on both parties to try to get there.
How will we know if things are proceeding in a positive fashion, Nomi?
We know that the pressure is on, and that the first phase, if I had to bet, I would bet on it that it's going to happen. Regarding the timing, it may have to be staggered, because Hamas may have trouble or are having relocating all the dead bodies. Some of the Hamas fighters that buried captives buried. The hostages are no longer in this world. So it's not necessarily the case that they know exactly where everybody is buried. Some tunnels have been bombed. But certainly we are going to see, hopefully within days, the captives, the hostages released.
Grateful for your time. Thank you, Nomi Bar Yaakov. You're a fellow at the Geneva Centre for Security Policy. Just coming up on 7:27, let's come back to matters here in the UK and the possibility that powers will be extended by the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, to allow police forces and services to restrict the amount of protest demonstrations you can have. Michael in Sunderland. Michael, do you agree with this? Good morning.
Nick, I think the government is sorting out this all the wrong way. All these people who've been arrested, right? I've never seen anybody put in prison or fined. Whatever the bill was at the weekend for the police, there's 500 people got arrested, split the bill between the 500, and when they start getting it in the pocket, they can get on these marches, but when they find out, they're getting fined 1,000, 10,000, whatever.
I'm confused. So these people should just almost be instantly fined, let's just say £500 or something. Just to clarify, is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. I've never heard of anybody going to prison. Like when the riots were on last year, especially in Sunderland, they were up in front of the court, all in prison or fined within 3 months.
Right.
All these marches, that will put a stop to it. Take the passports off them so they can't travel.
Right. Okay. It is a fundamental right to live in this country that you can protest.
Oh, yeah, I'm wrong about that, but the government have made it against the law to protest against a terrorist organisation.
Right.
So that's part of it. If you want to march, it's like you put one against drink driving, the problem is you get caught, you go to prison, you get a fine.
Yes.
So if you start hitting people in the pocket, Nick, it soon stop.
Would you really want to live in a country where we can take your passport away?
Hold on. It's a terrorist organisation. In the 70s and 80s, I was only young, right? But my uncle served over in Ireland in the IRA.
In the British Army, do you mean? Against
the British
IRA.
Army, yeah.
People
march. You didn't have people marching and everything for them, did you?
No.
They were letting bombs off, so it's a terrorist organisation. I can't understand why the government complicate things. Just keep it simple.
All right. Let's see if others agree. A bit draconian, Michael. Thank you. We're going to take your passport away. Let's see what others make of that idea. Thank you for your input. Glyn asks, is this a backdoor law to stop the hotel protests too? Kevin Manchester, I'd be asking protesters what they've been happening for nearly 2 years now. What do they think they've achieved? And lastly, this comes from Albert in Croydon. These demos are out of control. So isn't it time to reconsider bringing back water cannon? No, 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 and once again, no. In some instances, you have people in their 80s who, to me, I think they are misguided, but they're totally peaceful. They sit down holding up a banner. We are not, Albert, going to live in a country where we decide to get the water cannon out to blast 80-year-olds. Have you all gone raving mad? Actually, Michael, as well, we're not going to start taking passports off elderly vicars. For the love of God, can we have better ideas? The whole class will have to stay behind this morning because this has been a very poor start. You've obviously not been working over the weekend. So you're going to sit there and you're going to sit quietly and we're going to sit until somebody comes up with a good idea. We'll come back to this conversation. Let's hope that Martin might be able to move us on. Martin, there's a lot of responsibility on your shoulders, young man. I hope you can make it happen. Meanwhile, in other news, we're going to be hearing from a member of the government, a minister, how we're going to fast-track house purchase. Lord only knows that would help. Plus, sad news concerning an England Rugby World Cup winner.
It's never me that I feel sad for. It's the sort of sadness around having to tell my mum and the implications that has for her, having to tell the boys. I mean, you know, two brilliant boys.
Oh, World Cup winner, former England captain and rugby, Lewis Moody, announcing he has MND. And you know, if you want something done, ask a soldier. But why has Santander sent for the former head of the British Army? What's that going to mean when you go to pay in a cheque or try and take out some cash? Have to stand to attention? We'll find out after this. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get some news. Dominic Ellis.
Mediators are due to meet in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The latest efforts come after Hamas agreed to parts of the 20-point peace plan put forward by President Trump. The shadow chancellor will promise to save nearly $50 billion of taxpayers' money if the Conservatives win the next general election. Samuel Stride will outline plans later to cut spending on welfare and social housing at the party's conference in Manchester. And Jaguar Land Rover is expected to restart production in the UK this week following a major cyber attack in August. Experts say the hacks already cost the firm more than $1 billion in lost revenue. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Some outbreaks of rain in northern areas, sunny in the southeast with highs of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7.33, back to our conversation about these laws. Toughening up the ability to protest. Martin, you'll be the next caller. Let's get into the world of business. Christian May is an editor-in-chief at City AM, and here's a question I never thought I'd ask you. Why is Santander sending for the former head of the British Army? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think the answer is because it makes great commercial sense. We quite often hear about these top military figures leaving the service, and then they often reappear in defence companies and in the associated sectors, which is sort of, you know, understandable. But with Santander, which of course is a global bank, huge European bank, as well as being a big UK high street player, but it is a huge bank, have recognised rightly that defence is a boom sector. If you look at what's driving the FTSE 100, if you look at where a huge amount of government money is going, and if you look at the defence budgets that are rising, and if you look also at the number of defence tech startups and scale-ups that are spreading across Europe, then you've got a bank here saying, OK, we need to better understand the intricacies of this sector if we're going to lend money to these companies, etc. So we've got General Sir Patrick Sanders, who's Chief of the General Staff, from 2022 to 24, is going to join Santander to help steer the bank's approach to the defence industry.
We'll look and see how that works out. What are Apple and Samsung users? Why might they be in line for some cash?
Well, yes, I mean, it's nice to get a little bit of good news to start the week, I suppose, although it might be a little wet. The consumer campaigning group Which is taking to court Qualcomm, one of the huge chip manufacturers in mobile phone manufacturing, and they are alleging that Qualcomm effectively used its competitive muscle, I suppose, for anti-competitive behaviour is what they're alleging. They're suggesting that they force up the price of essential components that need to be used in Apple, Samsung handsets, which in turn force up the price for you and me and poor other plucky consumers. And so they're taking them to court. Now, if successful, there will be a subsequent stage to this, and you can bet your bottom dollar there'll be all sorts of rounds of appeal. But what they're saying on behalf of consumers is that Qualcomm is responsible for forcing up the prices in an unnecessary way. If ultimately successful, then about 30 million people in the UK who bought their Apple or Samsung smartphone between 2015 and 2024 could be entitled to, wait for it, about £17, which... nothing to sniff at in these times. It's not quite going to make up for the tax rises to come in November, I'm sure, but it'll buy you a burger and a pint in parts of London at least.
I can look forward to that, I suppose. I think it was Spandau Ballet. You're too young to remember Spandau Ballet, but they once sung of gold. Why is gold on the front page of the FT?
Yeah, I'm sure they're still singing. Put it this way. If you bought an ounce of gold in 2020, maybe the height of lockdown in the summer of 2020, you were getting nervous, you wanted to put your cash somewhere safe, and you bought an ounce of gold for about $2,000, you would have clocked that as of today it's very nearly doubled to about $4,000. This is the remarkable and ongoing rise in the price of gold. And there are many reasons for this. It is deemed to be the ultimate safe haven asset. So in times of uncertainty, political turmoil, security considerations, not least as it relates to the US, where there is some political tension, the government is shut down, concerns about US inflation, concerns about the strength of the US dollar. Central banks are buying gold, Asian states are buying gold. And now you have a situation of what you quite often see in the market, of FOMO, of fear of missing out, of retailers saying, hang on a minute, retail investors, ordinary people saying, this looks pretty good, this looks too good to be true even. Some of them are now going to start trying to pile in. Gold is very easy to purchase. You can buy a physical coin from an advert on TV, and then there are more sophisticated ways to buy it. But it is continuing. It's quite impressive run. And at this point, you start perhaps to see other people saying, I want a slice of that.
Lastly, what's the latest with Harrods?
Well, the Harrods situation is quite significant to them. They have set aside something in the region of £60 million to pay out compensation to alleged victims of historical abuse at the hands of Mohammed Al-Fayed. And this is quite a substantial amount of money. They're talking about the potential for just under £400,000 worth of compensation and redress to around 100 employees of the luxury department store who have alleged to have been victims of Mohammed Al-Fayed. And this is quite a material amount of money for the business to set aside. In fact, it's one of the reasons why in its latest full-year accounts, Harrods recorded a £34 million loss, which compares with a profit of over £100 million the previous year. So they do have some difficulties to work through. There is, of course, the shocking allegations relating to the late Mohammed Al-Fayed. They also have suffered a number of cyber infringements of late. I'm sure that they're going to try and look forward to a year when they can put this behind them. But until then, they are obviously now having to consider the consequences and implications and impact of the alleged abuse that took place.
Thanks for that, Christian May, your editor-in-chief at City AM, taking us to 7:38. Martin's in Bridlington. The change, potential change in law to make protests a little more difficult to mount in some areas or cities. How do you react to it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm absolutely gobsmacked that there's any change in law required. I've been involved with Bridlington Armed Forces Day. We've had it for the last 10 years, with the exception of 2 years of COVID.
Yes.
And the last 2 years, we had to provide a traffic management company at a cost of £2,500 to allow us to go through our own town for a 20-minute parade.
Right.
Now, both times, I had to be to meet the counter-terrorism police, and they talked about blocking road ends off, and it doesn't matter if which way, it's one way or the other way, stopping vehicles running into it, and if I didn't get it, it just wouldn't go ahead. Are you telling me that the police are now giving all that for free so that these Palestinian, pro-Palestinian marches can go ahead? Or have they got a traffic management system? Have they done risk assessments? Have they got road closures in place? Have they got vehicles blocking every exit and entry?
I mean, is it a numbers game, Martin? How many people do you have attend the parade?
We have normally between 250, 300, running a little town.
Yeah.
But I think we do our town proud.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is, why are the police... They make me jump through, not just me, there's more than just me do it, but we have to jump through hurdles to do the parade, and yet they actually said to us, if you don't tick these boxes, it doesn't go ahead.
All I can say is it a numbers game, in that I know in many instances you count the number of protesters in Trafalgar Square in their thousands. Indeed, in the summer, in the height of it, you counted them in their tens of thousands. So I would imagine control of that is beyond the means of a private company. It has to go to the police, doesn't it, do you think, Martin? But I get what you say about costs, of course.
No, because surely a group of veterans who've served their country, you know, we've got people there with MBEs, OBEs,
yes,
MSMs,
no,
long services, kind of, are they not worthy of 20 minutes of police time on what's supposed to be the National Armed Forces Day to go through their own town? Or do they have to go beg, borrow and steal money from wherever to pay for this traffic management system? But a group of people supporting prescribed terrorist organisation get the full support of the government and the police?
It seems completely about face. I can't answer that question because I'm not in charge of the East Yorkshire Police Force and I'm not in charge of policing in London, those demos, but I can only think it is, as I say, a numbers game. And so, but that, please, Martin, I'm not saying that justifies it. I'm only trying to find out a rationale, trying to discover what a rationale might be, because it seems utterly, as you say, unjustifiable. Good luck at the next parade. Let us know how it goes. Martin, when is it? When is your next parade? Just while
it'll be next June, next Armed Forces Day.
Let's talk again before then. Look after yourself. Be well. Thank you. 7:41 is the time. Now, quite rightly, we focused a lot of attention towards the end of last week with that tragedy that played out at the synagogue. But to show that there are other faiths in this country that are under pressure, and to make sure that we do justified and fair reporting, we need to tell you of what is feared to be an arson attack at a mosque in East Sussex. Fire crews were called to the mosque in Peacehaven on Saturday night. There are no injuries, but the front entrance of the building and a vehicle parked outside were damaged, according to Sussex police, who are now treating this as a hate crime. Bella Sankey is councillor and Labour leader of Brighton and Hove City Council, which puts you in the adjoining area, I think, from Knowledge. But what can you tell us about the area, and what can you tell us about the concerns of Muslim folk in and around where you are? Good morning, councillor.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, well, as you say, late on Saturday evening, a suspected arson attack on a mosque in Peacehaven. It's just over the boundary from us in Brighton and Hove. Obviously, all of our communities are very connected, and my residents in East Brighton worship at the mosque. You know, this is a community in shock. I went and visited the mosque yesterday with faith leaders, multi-faith leaders, to demonstrate solidarity and support. And people are absolutely reeling here. Such a serious act of violence. It's a miracle that nobody has been harmed. There were people inside the mosque when the attack took place. I'm incredibly grateful to East Sussex Fire and Rescue and Sussex Police, who are on the scene so quickly and are leading the investigations. Sussex Police have put out yesterday a call for information, some images of individuals that they want to speak to. And I would really urge anybody, wherever you may be, if you have any information that may be relevant, please do make contact with Sussex Police.
Councillor, I'm going to read what we've got from Sussex Police. If you've got anything in addition, then please do, join in. I understand that they have some images or photographs. One man wearing a distinctive black jacket with a pre-London logo. I don't know what that means. Pre-London logo in white on the chest. The second is wearing bright red gloves. Do you have any additional information to that, Councillor?
That's the key pieces of information. Please, I'm urging people to have a look at the photographs that have been released and to make contact with the police if you have anything that might be relevant.
OK. Lastly, obviously something such as this causes enormous fears and concern, but prior to this horrific incident, can we say that the Muslim folk there were fairly well settled and integrated in your area and your adjoining area?
We have a really long-standing Muslim population in this part of the world, Nick, you know, from the 19th century, a much treasured population here on the South Coast. But I think it's important to be clear that this community has been feeling under pressure following the rioting that took place last summer. This mosque was also targeted. And I've been speaking to Muslim residents in my city and across the region, and they are feeling under pressure and really feeling the impact of this increasing division in society and the rise of Islamophobia. So it's something we must all be conscious of. I would urge anybody, you know, reach out to your Jewish and Muslim friends and colleagues and neighbours over the coming days, because an attack on one is an attack on all.
Councillor, thank you for your time. Bella Sankey is Labour leader of Brighton and Hove City Council. Charlie, wow, you're not a million miles away from that area. You're in Lewes in Sussex. We're going to talk to you after the news concerning your ideas on clamping down on protest. And two England stars are in the news. In the world of soccer, it's Gary Neville.
Chance for Gary Neville now! I don't believe this! It's his first ever goal!
Well, I doubt if it's his first ever goal as a kid. He probably scored a few goals there. That was for Manchester United. Of course, he played for England. But here's sad news from another England hero, though with a different sport, rugby.
And you can't understand it. Should Moody have come in that quickly? I don't know.
Lewis Moody, who went on to skipper the England rugby team, has revealed this morning he's been diagnosed with MND. We'll have more on that later in the show. Both those stories, as Gary Neville says, that the flag is being used to divide us. We'll pick up on both those sportsmen's stories. 7:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Mediators are due to meet in Egypt later for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The Conservatives will set out plans later to reward work by giving young people a tax rebate of £5,000 towards their first home when they get their first job. And production's expected to resume at Jaguar Land Rover this week following a major cyber attack in August. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, some outbreaks of rain in northern areas but sunny spells developing in the southeast. Highs of 19 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise to junction 16 at the M40. It's because a car was on fire and there's only one lane open. Anti-clockwise is open but very slow because of onlookers. Also on the M25, it's slow clockwise at the Clackett Lane services after a van broke down and there was a fuel spillage, but all the lanes are now back open. And also on the M25, anti-clockwise queues from junction 3 at the M20 to the Dartford Tunnel, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Victoria line and Chiltern Railways are delayed by about half an hour between Marylebone and Aylesbury Vale Parkway. That's because of a track problem.
This is LBC.
Simone combined her old pensions with Pension B.
So I had multiple pensions from various jobs that I have been in, and every 6 months or so I would receive a statement, and I was losing track of all my different pensions and all the different statements. I just wanted one easy way of keeping them all in one place.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345-6060-973, LBC.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. he could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webeanycar.com.
Swollen gums, bad breath, bleeding whilst brushing. All signs of potential gum disease, a major cause of tooth loss. At Darwood & Tanner, our expert periodontists can help restore your gums and save your teeth. Using a range of cutting-edge procedures, from minimally invasive to advanced corrective surgery, we ensure that you are always in the best hands. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete gum disease treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom-scrolling for telling stories, too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
We've got the time just coming up on 10 minutes before 8, and house buying could become quicker, cheaper and easier under plans to be announced by the government today to try and kickstart a rather sluggish housing market. Here with more details, Labour MP and Communities Minister Mayetta Funbuller. Good to have you on, Minister. How will these schemes, how will this scheme work? Good morning.
Good morning. So look, this is the biggest shake-up of the home buy and seller market that we've seen in a generation, that we think will cut the process down by 4 weeks, will critically reduce by half the number of failed transactions. At the moment, failed transactions are costing consumers collectively about 400 million, industry about a billion, and critically will deliver £700 savings for the for first-time buyers.
What is the number of failed transactions, Minister?
So at the moment, we have about 1.2 million transactions a year, about 400,000 of those are failed transactions. We think that these reforms will drive it down to about 170,000.
And typically, why do they fail, Minister? What are the causes?
Well, so our reforms are trying to get to the causes. So the first is there isn't always upfront information about the property. So one of the things that we are proposing is to require sellers to provide all the information, including the home condition survey, so everyone knows where they are at the start of it. The second thing, once that's in place, we want to move towards binding conditional contracts at offer stage so that both parties are locked into that process going forward. But we also know that the process is really archaic. It's really fiddly, it's really complicated. We want to streamline all of that, and critically we want to make it digital. And then there is a big onus on estate agents to make sure that they are playing their part in getting the process right. That's why we want to professionalise that, including having qualifications for estate agents.
So when you talk about binding, for the purpose of debate, I make an offer of a property for £500,000, which is accepted. That's it. No more gazumping. No more I pull out at the last minute. Is that broadly what we're getting at, Minister?
Yes, that's where we're getting at. And that's what we see elsewhere. For example, in Scotland, we know that it works. And critically, we know that it pushes down failed transactions, which is a thing that's really costly, both for sellers, cost them about £800, but an absolute nightmare for buyers as well.
Now, this is being promoted in some part, Minister, by saying it could help save first-time buyers an average of £710. How do you and your colleagues get to that figure?
Yes, yeah, so we've modelled it, and it's a combination of the fact that we are making the process more streamlined. It's a combination of the fact that those failed transactions that's costing everyone, we're reducing them. But critically, we think it will make the process work much better, which will drive through efficiencies, and that's the thing that gets us to that number.
How does that drive through add up to £710?
Well, there's some very, very complicated modelling that's been done by some whizzy economists that gets to that number. But it's a combination of the reforms that we're putting in place that we think will deliver that. And it, by the way, it will also deliver savings for people who are both buying and selling a property within the chain.
Now, you won't remember HIPs that were introduced in 2007. You would have been at school. But these were, well, you weren't. You would have been in school. These, probably even a primary school. These were home information packs that were introduced by the previous Labour administration. And it's fair to say many in the industry were not fully signed up fans, Minister. And the Conservatives ditched them all the way back in 2010. Aren't these just HIPs by another name?
I've got to thank you on the compliment. I wasn't in school, I was working, but really? I'll take it. Yes, I will take it. Look, this is very different to HIPS.
In what way, Minister?
So the principle that we need to have upfront information is right, but that was a really clunky, paper-based approach to doing that. We're trying to make this more streamlined. We're trying to make this more digital. But as I say, alongside the information upfront, it is the binding conditional contracts that we think will bite and have an impact on failed transactions. But critically, it's making sure that estate agents are playing their role. So there is a package of measures that come together in order to drive the outcomes that we think we can deliver.
The Conservatives are in Manchester, and we'll hear later today, we understand, a £5,000 national insurance rebate towards youngsters' first homes. That sounds like an exciting proposal. Have they perhaps rather stolen some of the Labour Party's thunder here?
I mean, Nick, I struggle not to roll my eyes. You know, the Conservatives had 14 years to fix the housing crisis. They had 14 years to build the record numbers of homes that we need. They categorically failed. And so they can sort of chuck out any idea that they want. Candidly, the hard graft that needed to be put in before wasn't there. We're getting on with the job of reforming the planning system. We're getting on with the job of putting record levels of investment into social and affordable housing, £39 billion. Mandatory housing targets across the country so that we can deliver that 1.5 million homes as well as make it easier for people to buy a home.
And how are you getting on with that target of 1.5 million homes after the end of year one, Minister?
Well, if you speak to anyone in industry, what they will tell you is that there was always a lag. So in some respects, the failures of the last government are the things that were feeding through in the first year. But we are getting on with the job of putting in place the changes and the reforms. But we're already seeing an uptick in housing starts, so 29% increase this year compared to last year. We have got to keep running at this because ultimately...
Do you know what the figure was for your first full year in power?
Well, since we've been in power, about 230,000 homes have been built on our watch.
230,000? That's good.
230,000 since we've been in power. That's not enough. So we need to see a steep uptake building homes, which we recognise.
Just to clarify, you're saying to that, because I've got a figure that's rather low, but your Minister, you're saying 230,000 homes since Labour took power in last July.
Since last July, 230,000 new additional dwellings have been put in place. The number you might have might just be for the kind of calendar year, which is obviously lower. We recognise it's lower. That's why we're cracking on with the reforms that are needed in order to make sure that we can deliver that 1.5 million target.
Lastly, there are reports of demonstrations planned and events at universities for tomorrow, as of course mark the 2 years since the October 7th attacks, and you'll be aware across the country there's such sensitivity. What would your message be to those organising those demos, Minister?
This is a really tough time for the Jewish community. We have seen a rise in anti-Semitism that is absolutely unacceptable. We've had the first time in our history a Jewish person killed because they are Jewish. That is absolutely unacceptable. And we need to stand alongside the Jewish community in solidarity. And so what I would say to people is, you know, they are the Jewish community, are our neighbours, they are our community, they are our friends, and we should be compassionate and thoughtful and considerate to what is a really, really dark and...
Lastly, do you understand why your colleague David Lammy was jeered in Manchester on Friday?
There is a lot of hurt and anger in the Jewish community, rightly so, and emotions are raw, so we get it. And look, what is the truth? The truth is there has been a rise in anti-Semitism. We have seen an increase in hate crime actually across the piece. Religious hate crime is increasing. So there is a problem, and we've got to get to the heart of that problem. It is not right. It is not acceptable that the Jewish community don't feel safe in this country. We've got to do the job of rooting that out. And government has a really important role to play in that, but we all have an important role to play in that. There cannot be hatred and division, and we all have to stand up against that.
Grateful to a very youthful-looking Communities Minister, thank you, for Miatta Fanbulla, for taking us through how this new plan will work, speeding up house sales. We might take your calls on that later, but at almost 2 minutes before 8, let's get Charlie and Lewis in. Charlie, let's talk about these proposed changes, how we are permitted to demonstrate. Would you be on side with those? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for taking the call.
Not at all.
I'm not on side with them, no. I think it's important that we pause here and we take a breath and we zoom out. And, you know, what we're seeing is...
A pause on Saturday, did they, after the events at the Synagogue?
And, you know, And I think, you know, that's okay. You know,
why? Well,
let's separate out what's happening here. These are protests against, you know, a war that's happening, you know, an occupation, you know, a massacre of tens of thousands of people, including tens of thousands of children. So, you know, we're talking about something that's different to...
No, you're talking about allowing a community or a group of people in this country to mourn. You're talking about showing respect.
Well, no, I think that's the way this is being framed, and I think that's very cynical.
Well, it's not being framed, that's the reality.
No, well, I don't accept
that,
Nick.
How come you know better than Jews in Manchester? Remind me.
Well, look, everyone's entitled to have their opinion, but I think what's happening is we're seeing a conflation with, you know, the right to protest, which has been a long-established right in this country. It's a central pillar of any democracy, and a culture war. But, and
Charlie, lastly, why would it have hurt to take one weekend off?
Because I think what the point is that the taking a weekend off it's got nothing to do with mourning the loss of life.
And it is for them.
Sad that's happened.
It is for them.
Yes. And
I'm their feelings don't count in as far as the demonstration is what seems to come across. Charlie, the music means we must move on. Thank you. We might return to that conversation, but we go to the Conservative Party conference and their pledge to remove 750,000 migrants under a new plan. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch told the BBC yesterday,
"They do not belong here. They are committing crimes. They are hurting people. I'm tired of us asking all of these irrelevant questions about where should they go. They will go back to where they should do or another country, but they should not be here."
And we'll go back to this idea of how to plan to speed up house sales and save first-time buyers £710. And the sad news revealed this morning that the former England rugby captain and World Cup winner, Lewis Moody, says he has MND. Those stories and more after the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, President Trump has raised the pressure on mediators ahead of Gaza peace talks, saying time is of the essence. Delegations from both Hamas and Israel are due to meet in Egypt for indirect discussions shortly. The latest diplomatic efforts come after Hamas agreed to parts of the 20-point peace plan put forward by Donald Trump. Peace negotiator Nomi Bar Yaakov has told Nick there's huge momentum for progress.
The hope is that, as President Trump said, is that by the end of this week, the hostages will be back at home in Israel and the prisoners released. Whether he will manage to meet that deadline, I don't know.
Right.
But he's putting an awful lot of pressure on both parties to try to get there.
The Conservatives will promise to reward work by giving young people a tax rebate of £5,000 towards their first home when they get their first job. The Shadow Chancellor, Samuel Stride, will make the announcement at the party's conference in Manchester later. The move will be funded by cuts to public spending worth nearly £50 billion over 5 years. Jaguar Land Rover is expected to resume some production in the UK this week as it continues to recover from a major cyber attack. The hack has led to a pause in manufacturing since the end of August. Experts say the outage already cost the firm more than £1 billion in lost revenue. The government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of reforms to the home buying system. Changes include asking sellers for more information up front so buyers don't need to pay for searches and surveys. The Communities Minister Miatta von Bula's just told Nick it's an archaic system that needs streamlining.
This is the biggest shake-up of the home buy and seller market that we've seen in a generation, that we think will cut the process down by 4 weeks, will critically reduce by half the number of failed transactions. At the moment, failed transactions are costing consumers collectively about £400 million, industry about £1 billion, and critically will deliver £700 savings for first-time buyers.
The former England rugby union captain Lewis Moody has revealed he's been diagnosed with motor neurone disease. The 47-year-old was part of the 2003
2023 World Cup winning side. In a post on social media, he says he's feeling fit and well and is focused on staying positive and living life. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 94.91. It closed up 63 on Friday. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most today. Some rain in northern areas. Sunny spells developing in the southeast with highs of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm back in Charlie Bigham's kitchen. What's on the menu?
My ultimate lasagna, made with a wonderfully rich ragu, slow-cooked for at least 2 hours, layered 5 times with fresh pasta, and finished with creamy bechamel and mature cheddar.
Ooh, I like what I'm hearing.
And I haven't even got to the sneaky layer of bechamel in the middle yet. Cheers.
The only thing I like more than a delicious lasagna is one that I didn't have to make. You're not free tomorrow, are you?
I think I've got plans.
Charlie Bigham's.
Handmade in my kitchen. Cooked in yours.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after 8 on Monday, October the 6th, coming up in this hour, the Conservative pledge to remove 750,000 migrants under a new borders plan, but how exactly will it work? Back to the government and the Labour conference in Liverpool last week. Health Secretary Wes Streeting spoke with me about his concern over first cousin marriages.
First cousin marriages are high risk and unsafe. We see the genetic defects it causes, the harm that it causes.
You're right, Health Secretary. More than 2 child deaths a week. So why on earth do people go ahead with them? We'll come back with the conversation I had with the Communities Minister there about trying to speed up house buying and save you cash along the way. And sad news this morning as Lewis Moody, who was an England captain, he was part of the World Cup winning squad in rugby, wasn't the captain then, told the BBC of his diagnosis with MND.
It's never me that I feel sad for. It's the sort of sadness around having to tell my mum and the implications that has for her, having to tell the boys. I mean, you know, 2 brilliant boys.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Quite a lot of work to do for the Conservatives in Manchester and for its the party leader, Kemi Badenoch. It's fair to say that they're rather adrift in the polls. Now, we're still a long way out and they are still probably not quite licking their wounds, but still recovering from a fair old kicking that they got at the ballot box. So they need to come up with policies. And it doesn't seem to matter now, does it? Whether it's reform and their plans for indefinite leave to remain, or whether it's the government talking about how they would crack down. And now we hear the Conservatives say they would want to remove 750,000 illegal immigrants within 5 years. Here is Mrs. Badenoch speaking on the BBC yesterday.
They do not belong here. They are committing crimes. They are hurting people. We have been trying to deport so many people and have been facing obstacles in the legal system. That's why we're leaving the ECHR. We tried to deport a Jamaican national who had committed crimes. Shabana Mahmood and Keir Starmer wrote a letter asking us not to deport him. He went on to kill someone else later. I'm tired of us asking all of these irrelevant questions about where should they go. They will go back to where they should do or another country, but they should not be here. We need to look after the people in our country.
Sir Grant Shapps, former Conservative MP, former Defence Secretary, joins me now. Do you have more idea or sense of how this would work in actual practicality? Sir Grant, good morning.
Good morning. I think at this stage it's outlining the plan to do it, the desire to do it, and I think it's a decent enough first step of my variety of different roles in government. Very briefly, I was Home Secretary, and I came to the conclusion, even during those few days, that actually, unless we really set out a serious plan to do this, we are never going to win the trust of the public, because you can't have open and porous borders. You've got to be prepared to both close the border, but then also act on people who are here illegally. So I think detail probably to come, I imagine, but actually good first step. We do need to be tough on this, because otherwise nothing will change.
If we use the example cited by Mrs. Badenoch of this Jamaican individual, if Jamaica doesn't want him, where does he go?
Well, I don't think it can be the case that people or countries, rather, that have, you know, foreign nationals, or rather have their own people leave the country, that they can refuse to take them back. Like, you know, there has to be the case that if you've come here and you are not legally here and you have no rights to stay, then I'm afraid you literally have to go back to the country that you are from, in this case, Jamaica. And I think what frustrates so many people, particularly with these small boat crossings, is people are here illegally. They crossed knowing they shouldn't be coming, and they've come from a safe third country. So in that case, they should be back in France, because that is where they came from. And then France can presumably send them back from wherever they came from. We shouldn't just, you know, it was kind of incredibly soft touch putting up with this whole chain.
But so a Syrian who crosses on a small boat and then commits a crime or has to be deported, we'd send him back to France.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't wait for them to commit a crime. The other policy, which I thought was actually a very good idea announced yesterday, is if you cross illegally, you will not be able to stay. We were trying to pass this legislation.
But where would you go?
Well, in that particular case, they have to come back from the place where they most recently came from, in this case, France. We shouldn't be allowing people to make this treacherous... We should go back even before that, though, Nick. We shouldn't even be allowing people to cross that channel. And I think you have to put in place everything required to stop people making what is actually an incredibly dangerous journey in any case. And if people got here and simply weren't allowed to stay, then you would find that people would stop crossing because it was a pointless exercise. And the problem is the entire system has been a soft touch. And I have to say, the lot are in government now, who voted against every single measure we took to toughen that up, 400 times I think it was in total, have a lot to answer for here, because numbers were coming down by a quarter in the year before they came to power.
So you do see a time in which the French would accept these folk?
Well, I think what you have to do is, you know, slash the boats, don't let them travel.
You mean literally cut the boats with knives.
I think you actually
What happens if a child drowns having had a dinghy slashed with a knife?
How many children are we going to allow to continue drowning in this illegal activity that's going on with gangs transporting people at the moment, right? And that is happening all the time. And like, I'm afraid you have to at some point say, enough is enough. Now, you know me, I'm not extreme in any sense in my politics, but I've seen this from the inside. I've seen the data, so briefly as Home Secretary, as Defense Secretary. I understand that unless you do something, it will just continue. The problem won't stop. And more people will die as a result of making those treacherous journeys than actually doing something about it. It's not right. It's not fair on those individuals or on this country to allow it to continue.
Final word before I let you go. I understand that your father-in-law was caught up in those horrific events at the synagogue in Manchester towards the end of last week, Sir Grant. Have you been able to speak with him? If so, what has he told you?
Yeah, we drove straight up to Manchester. First of all, we didn't know quite what the situation was until we saw him emerge and saw the pictures on TV. We drove straight up to Manchester. He just got back from debriefing the police on the incident. He was on the inside of the doors whilst this maniac terrorist was face-to-face with him through the glass, trying to hack his way in with a knife, with flower pots, with trying to ram the doors. He was there protecting us. So sadly, the chap next to him took a bullet.
That was literally standing next to your father-in-law, was it, Sir Grant?
Yeah. Yes, it was. And, you know, he's in shock, the family's in shock, the community's in shock, and I think the country is as well. And to have, you know, an individual like this with such hate in their hearts, thinking that this, you know, was an idea to get up on Thursday morning and go and murder people like this is horrendous. And I'm afraid what made me really sad, in addition to those deaths and injuries, was that, you know, whereas the family initially put out a message, his family, the terrorist murderer, put out a message saying this was a heinous crime and they distanced themselves, it later transpired that his father, the terrorist father, had actually written disgusting stuff after Hamas made that terrorist attack on October the 7th. And, you know, clearly have been an influence on his son in entirely the wrong way. What is wrong with people? How can, you know, somebody come to this country, get the shelter, get the, you know, the humanity that Britain, I think, is still, you know, world leading in? Because I do actually generally think our relations inter-community are extremely good. By the way, including in that synagogue where the rabbi told me, I had actually addressed a dinner at that synagogue a few months back. Mm. And he told me they have excellent community relations with mosques, with churches, with the synagogues. You know, how can, you know, the family and this man have, you know, condoned things which led up to him carrying out this horrendous, horrific attack. And
I must give best wishes. I have to move on, Sir Grant. Best wishes to your family, obviously. Very trying times for all of them. Sir Grant Shapps, thank you. You are former defence, and as you pointed out, you're also former Home Secretary as well, 13 after 8. Now, what about the practicality? Stephen Barrett is a barrister and columnist for The Spectator. So this is, we're probably going to hear more detail, more meat on the bone, but as it's striking you now, what merit, if any, do these plans have? Good morning.
Good morning. We are going to, as a nation, have to face up to taking actions that we haven't taken before. And that's really, I think, at the meat of this. You're quite right to focus on the key question, which is what happens if a nation kicks off and says, we don't want X individual back. I think that is a key question. And I think we should turn our mind to it now. But ultimately, it's going to be a question of law hitting realpolitik. And we are going to need to deport people. When you look at the realities of deportations across the planet, so if we just take, you know, every country that does things, it's actually Muslim countries that seem to be mostly involved in deportation, which struck me as quite interesting. The UAE does it a lot, as does Saudi. They send an awful lot of people from Pakistan back to Pakistan. Now, they do it by cancelling the passports of the individuals. And they send them back to Pakistan for various reasons. And the Pakistanis accept them because they effectively threaten them by saying, well, if you don't take back these Pakistanis, we'll send back all of the Pakistanis and you won't get the remittance payments. And Pakistan as an economy depends very largely on sending its people out to other countries, them working very hard. And earning money and then sending that money back to Pakistan. So that's how their economy works. So the Pakistanis say to the UAE, they say to Saudi, okay, that's absolutely fine. We'll take these people back as long as you leave the others in place and they're earning money. We get it. You know, this is a reasonable relationship between grown up countries. There are other nations who deport. Iran deports an awful lot of, Pakistanis rather more forcibly than Saudi and the UAE does. And Pakistan itself has deported in the last year nearly a million people back to Afghanistan. And Afghanistan was given very little choice because Pakistan and Afghanistan share a border. So they simply push them over. That is how they do it. Now, our questions are going to be more about what we think is acceptable as a civilized Western society, as multicultural society, what are we willing to do in order to get people deported? The example of a Jamaican is pretty easy. You know, these are Caribbean nations who are little countries, who are friends of ours historically, who we get on. Even if we fall out with one of them, we get on with their neighbours. You know, we're not going to fall out with them long term. There's no question of military, threats from any of them. So ultimately, they are going to accept an individual back if we are simply brave enough to pressure them.
But what of the Syrian who came here via a dinghy from Calais?
Well, I think the Syrian is a really interesting question. And there we get into this issue called refoulement. And if people remember when the Rwanda scheme collapsed, a lot of the incidents were about this principle of refoulement, which is, it's a French word, but it means a concept of, do you want to send someone back somewhere where they might be in danger? And that's going to be another thing that we as a nation are going to have to have a very serious think about.
And that's where I must leave it, Stephen. I'm sorry, only for time reasons. Stephen Barrett, thank you. Barrister and Spectator columnist, 17 minutes after 8. The idea that we would actually allow or push for the French to start slashing those dinghies with knives, do you see that happening? We'll pick up on that conversation. 8:17, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Mediators are due to meet in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The shadow chancellor will promise to save nearly $50 billion of taxpayers' money if the Conservatives win the next election. And the government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of reforms to the home buying system. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Some outbreaks of rain in northern areas with sunny spells in the southeast. Highs of 19 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the western stretch of the M25 clockwise from before junction 14 at Heathrow to 16 at the M40. It's because a car was on fire earlier and two of the four lanes are closed. Anti-clockwise is open but very slow from junction 18 at Chorley Wood because of onlookers. Also on the M25, it's very slow anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel, and clockwise there are delays from junction 3 at the M20 to 5 at the M26 after a fuel spillage. In Causdon North, there are delays on the A20 23 Brighton Road both ways. That's because of an accident. And delays continue on the North Circular Road southbound from Hanger Lane all the way down to North Ealing, also after an accident.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
My Michael, 92 years strong. He didn't like a fuss in his 20s, 40s or 90s. I talked to Co-op Funeral Care. Simple. No frills, felt better. There we had it. One brilliant goodbye for my minimalist Mike.
With everything from direct cremations to traditional funerals, however you choose to say goodbye, we help you own it. Co-op. Owned by you. Right by you. Search Co-op Funeral Care for your nearest funeral home.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Train to Peckham, kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
Six packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda, clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
21 minutes after 8. Let's pick up on what you're saying concerning our conversation. Difficulties, of course, about the idea of possible going in and slashing these dinghies and whether that would actually work, as yet again tough-line, hard-line policies regarding immigrants and immigration is going to be yet another front piece of another political party's views. G in Doncaster, how about the next dinghy that's seized, trace the manufacturer, close them down? If not, why not? Well, that is something they talked about, this government has talked about. And I think from memory, a lot of the boats are manufactured in Turkey and a lot of the engines are manufactured in Germany. And I know that the former Home Secretary Yvette Cooper visited at least one of those countries and talked about greater cooperation with Germany and trying to close down the production of the engines, but whether that will work. Tony in Wolverhampton Grant Shapps talks the same not rubbish about Labour voting. The Tories had a significant majority. The voting of opposition was irrelevant to what could be passed during their time in government. Spencer's in Crawley on this. I don't see the day they start slashing boats with knives. Do you? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. No, I don't either. I think, unfortunately, the government is as weak as possible when it comes to protecting UK rights.
I agree. So what should they be doing?
Well, personally, because the French fishermen want to fish in UK waters, I believe that should be our bargaining chip at UK level. We should be explaining to the French that if they want to fish in our waters, then they will accept all the dinghy crosses.
Do you think they're likely to do that?
Not this Labour government.
What about the French? Macron is under enormous pressure as it is, that the fishermen are a very, they might not be very high in number, but they're incredibly vocal and well-organised group. I wonder what level of opposition he might see over there, Spencer.
He would have massive opposition if we actually threatened to do that, because they would be out rioting. They've got four men doing this, and the French fishermen are the only ones that would hold the French government to account.
Lastly, when you hear, as you just have, from a senior member of the former Conservative administration, he was Transport Secretary, Home Secretary, Foreign Secretary, I think he was Housing Secretary as well, Sir Grant Shapps, do you think, well, you had 14 years to solve this, or do you think, well, let's listen to them now that they're in opposition? Which way do you go on that?
Well, at the moment, they're still a work in progress. I think Kemi needs time. I'm not sure she'll get anywhere in terms of getting the party back to where they were, but maybe there's a potential for a pact before the next election.
And a pact with?
Reform.
I thought it might be. Would you, if you were voting in a couple of days' time this Thursday, you'd probably be currently inclined to vote Reform?
Possibly, but I would look at the numbers locally here in Crawley.
Oh, you'd be a tactical vote, is what you're saying, just to clarify.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Spencer, enjoyed our conversation. More calls coming in on that, but I have got someone who can give us a view on an important story, and a story that's broken on our watch, actually, which is the former England captain Lewis Moody revealing he's been diagnosed with motor neurone disease, admitting he cannot yet face the full implication of the condition that killed fellow rugby players Doddy Weir and Rob Burrow. He's, of course, the former England captain and a World Cup winner, although he wasn't skipper at that point. And here he is, speaking on the BBC with his wife Annie by his side.
We processed lots of emotions over the last couple of weeks. And I suppose when you talk about it, and I generally feel fine when you talk about it, it's never me that I feel sad for. It's the sort of sadness around having to tell my mum, having to tell the boys. I mean, you know, two brilliant boys, and that was pretty heartbreaking, wasn't it? But I don't want to get stuck in the negativity or the doom and gloom, and I don't want to stay positive. I want to, you know, stay in the moment. I want to learn and understand what it is. I want to speak to more people and see where we can help as well. And hopefully, you know, another couple of challenges left in the body yet. It's still working. It's still with me. And until the point that, you know, it isn't, I suppose, you know, hopefully there'll be some suits available at that point that I could jump into. But, yeah, the future's uncertain at the minute, I suppose, isn't it? So that's why we're just focused on now.
Now, for those of you who don't follow rugby, Mr. Moody won 71 England caps, toured with the British and Irish Lions in New Zealand, and had the nickname Mad Dog because of his fearless and relentless approach to the game and to tackling. He once played on with a broken leg for Leicester. That shows what a determined individual he has. My goodness me, he was, of course, a replacement in the Rugby World Cup final in Australia in 2003, got the ball at the back of the line-out, setting a platform for Matt Dawson to give Johnny Wilkinson that drop goal, and all our hearts soared. But what now? Tanya Curry is CEO of the Motor Neuron Disease Association. If I may call you Tanya, thank you for coming on the show. I suppose we better start by explaining what it is and what the patient then has to endure. Tanya, good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and thank you very much for inviting us to meet with you this morning. And before I do anything, I just want to send all of our love to Lewis and Annie, a really tricky time for them and their family at the moment. MND is a neurological condition. It damages the neurons in the brain, and it affects the brain and the spinal cord. It can lead to muscle weakness and paralysis. It can lead to difficulties with swallowing and breathing. And lots of people will have seen this disease very much in the public eye with Doddy Weir and our patron Rob Burrow, who sadly died from the disease. So a really tough time for this family at the moment.
It's something that only can be managed, Tanya, not be cured, right?
Yeah, we sadly don't have the cure. That's the research that we're all working hard for at the moment. But we are learning so much more about this disease. We're learning how it presents. We're learning what treatment options might be there for it. There are some exciting things coming down the line, but we're really investing and working hard. Our community ultimately want to know what causes this disease, why have they got it? And that's a question we're going to be working really hard to answer over the coming years.
I don't know if you're a rugby fan, but he was one hell of a player and he would throw himself in. I wonder whether that has an effect. And in doing some research, I note that in Italy there's been a study done, and now this is football players, but football players are more prone to developing MND. What do we know about the sporting aspect here, Tanya?
We don't know a huge amount. We know that some studies have shown a link between head injuries and contact sports with neurological diseases, but we don't know enough to say that's an absolute correlation. The causes are unknown. The scientists think there is some kind of combination between environmental, lifestyle and genetic factors, but we can't actually say, yes, it's that sport that causes this disease. But we also recognise we are seeing sportsmen coming through with these injuries.
Lastly, and these are from your own organisation, the disease kills a third of people within 12 months and more than half within 2 years, as you rightly pointed out, swallowing and breathing become more difficult. What's the longest you might be able to look forward to? Do we have a sense of that, Tanya?
Well, we don't have a sense of that, but you have someone like Stephen Hawking who lived for 20 years plus with this disease. So it's very much unknown. We obviously talk about the stats that affect people in that short period of time, because sadly it is a lot. But our organisation is there to wrap around people, to give them all the support, the care, the guidance they need with all their clinical teams and give them that information. It's important people live as well as they can and have their quality of life really focused on when they have this diagnosis.
Grateful for your time, Tanya. Thank you. Tanya Curry, your CEO of the Motor Neurone Disease Association. If you are coping with it, or possibly, sadly, it's not that easy now to engage in conversations on the radio, perhaps someone you love, your husband, your wife, whatever it might be, if you're engaged in it, as Tanya pointed out, of course, the three people that we've just discussed, what links them all, Doddy Weir, Rob Burrow and Lewis Moody? Well, it's all rugby, whether it's a rugby league or rugby union. It's all rugby, isn't it? And you only have to have watched one game to see how brutal they can clash into each other. So if you're coping with that, do let us know. James, you want to talk about what the French should be doing concerning the idea of stopping migration. We'll be doing that. Also, in a sort of related story, Gary Neville, former England player, is talking his concerns about people who fly the flag.
The division that's being created is absolutely disgusting. Mainly created by angry, middle-aged white men.
Huge fan of Gary Neville. Genuinely tremendous broadcaster. But I'm afraid he's right back on the wrong step on this one. 8:30, you'll listen to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Time for the news, Dominic Ellis.
Mediators are due to meet in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The latest efforts come as Hamas agreed to parts of the 20-point peace plan put forward by President Trump. The shadow chancellor will promise to save nearly $50 billion of taxpayers' money if the Conservatives win the next election. Samuel Stride will outline plans later to cut spending on welfare and social housing at the party's conference in Manchester. And the government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of major reforms to the home buying system. Changes include asking sellers for more information up front so buyers don't need to pay for searches and surveys. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most. Some outbreaks of rain in northern areas, sunny spells in the southeast, highs of 19 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. We are one step closer to an end to the war in the Middle East. Should President Trump now be awarded a Nobel Peace Prize? And what role should former Prime Minister Sir Tony Blair now play? Join me, Tom Swarbrick, for the latest developments this afternoon from 4. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the LBC app.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return.
We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:32, James in Scarborough, thanks for hanging on the line. You want to talk about this idea from Sir Grant Shapps, we need to start slashing the dinghy, or rather the French need to start slashing the dinghies a bit more. What do you want to say to that? Good morning.
I'm very frustrated, to be honest, because Grant Shapps is part of the government and knows full well that that has already been taking place, is going on
once.
Today.
No, it's not. It happened
Nick,
once.
It's widely reported. You can see the videos. It's widely reported.
It's happened once, I think, because if anybody drowns, yeah, they have to change the law.
How far they are, but it's happening every day. It's going on. It's part of the funding that they get from French. We have to be honest about these discussions. We can't just ignore things. I think you're a very intelligent man.
I'm not.
You don't lie, but you ignore the truth sometimes. It's the same with this flag business. As a Jewish person and the grandson of a Holocaust survivor, we're ignoring the fact that this Operation Raise the Colours, I love the flag, it's my country, but this Operation Raise the Colours was organised by Andrew Currian, who, if you read Year of the Rat, is a Holocaust denier. He doesn't think Jews should even exist. He believes in this great replacement theory led by Jews.
Right.
He's been imprisoned for race.
Can we just come back to this idea of slashing inflatable dinghies? Where are you getting the idea that this goes on a daily basis, James?
The Conservative government said it. They said that we're funding the French, but the problem is it's a really large coast.
James, they've done it once. They're trying to change the law. They've only done it once because if someone drowned, the gendarme or the border force official who cut the... would face jail.
That's why they have to do it while it's in the shallow waters.
I'm going to say they've only done it once. Have they done it perhaps twice? Yes, maybe. It is as rare as hen's teeth how often they do it, James. That is the reality.
So who's lying then? Are the Conservatives themselves lying when they said we've got French doing this every day? Well, but the issue they said isn't the law.
Hold on, when did they say? I don't recall when they said they were doing it every day.
You reported it, Nick. I listen to you every morning.
No, I've said countless times that they can't. This is. I'm getting like a broken record. They can't do it until there's a change in the law.
I heard it, so either I'm going. You know, you're being dishonest or I'm going
well, I'm
mad.
Regularly dishonest, but the one thing I wouldn't do is get it wrong as regards this. I have never said, ever, that they are doing it on a daily basis. Let's look at it lastly. Should they do it on a daily basis, James?
Well, there's an interview 4 or 5 years ago where the Conservatives said that the issue isn't that they're not doing it, the issue is that the beaches are so wide. And I understand that. Look at Scarborough Beach, where I live. It's a massive... You would have to have people stationed metres apart because it's such a wide beach,
right.
You can get across. So it's funded, isn't it? So it's looking at... It's not saying this is the solution, because you would have to have walls of people on the beach.
Well, it would be. And remember how many hundreds of kilometres or miles coastline we're talking about in that particular part of France. James, I've enjoyed our conversation. Have yourself a good day. I have to move on for time reasons. Thank you. And I'm sure I've never said they were doing it on a daily basis. I'm damn certain of it, because they're not and they can't until there is a change in plan or change in law. 8:36. I'll take some calls on MND in a moment. But let's talk now about another health matter. And the deaths of more than 2 children a week in England are linked to their parents being closely related. Mortality records show that cousin marriage was a contributory factor in 128 child deaths during the 12 months to March 2024, a higher annual tally than some years ago. Why would you want to marry your cousin? That's just weird, isn't it? Now, about a week ago, I spoke with Health Secretary Wes Streeting about this as NHS guidance was published, which appeared to endorse these marriages. The Health Secretary was less than impressed.
The first I heard of this, Nick, was when I saw that report. I asked immediately, what on earth is going on here and what they're playing at? The advice has been taken down. But why was it ever there in the first place? The medical science and evidence is clear. First cousin marriages are high risk and unsafe. We see the genetic defects it causes, the harm that it causes. That's why that advice should never have been published.
Now, the guidance talked about the marriage being linked to, and I quote, stronger extended family support systems and economic advantages. Cousin marriages is popular among couples from South Asia and Islamic communities, particularly those with Pakistani heritage. It's a tradition brought from their home countries to protect family wealth, culture, ethnic identity, religious belief, and extended kinship. But obviously, it has enormous problems. Dr. Julian Barwell is a consultant in clinical genetics, an honorary professor in genomic medicine at the University Hospitals of Leicester, and joins me now. What are the problems or the conditions that this can lead to? Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. So, if you marry your cousin, there's a 3% increased risk of genetic conditions with a particular type of inheritance called autosomal recessive. And that's because we all carry subtle changes in our genes, which if we've got one altered copy, is no problem at all. But if we inherit an altered copy of that gene from both parents, then it can increase the risk of disease. So you've probably heard of something like cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, of course.
But if you carry one change, that might protect you to a degree from cholera. So through evolution, that being a good thing. And we all carry subtle changes like that. But if you marry your cousin, there's a 1 in 8 chance that you share that gene with them. And that can increase the likelihood of your children having two altered copies of that gene. It's a bit like having two copies of a book in the library. One book's been taken out, not a problem, you've got the other copy. But if both copies are taken out, you lose that information. And so if you marry a cousin, for instance, in certain communities, such as Northern Europe, there might be increased risk of cystic fibrosis. But in Africa, something like sickle cell disease, thalassemia, as well in Southern Europe as well.
You're an honorary professor in genomic medicine at the University Hospitals of Leicester. You won't know this, but I know Leicester very, very well because my late mother was raised there, so it's a city I know well. This would be a very live issue, I would have thought, with the population of the city.
It's a very important issue. So there's two points, I think, here. One is there an increased risk? And the answer is yes. So medically, we do know that there are significant problems that can occur through cousin marriages, but also for people marrying within certain groups, which we call endogamy, where there hasn't been a lot of breeding with other groups as well. You can end up sharing particular genetic traits in common. And you may have seen in certain communities, people go off and have a blood test before they get married for these sorts of reasons of sharing the same type of subtle gene changes, which become an issue if both parents passed it on. The other issue is, how do you manage it? And this comes down to building trust in communities. What we want is, if people are concerned about a recessive condition, there are genetic tests that you can do to try and help work out the risk and to inform and educate and work with these communities. To put it into context, it's about the same level of risk as both parents being over the age of 45. And we don't ban that. We don't sterilize everybody at 45. So it is a matter of what we believe is education, trust, and building links with communities. The ban would be difficult to enforce and to check and would potentially reduce the amount of communication that would occur between communities. And obviously in Leicester, where we have a lot of people at risk of recessive condition, what we want to is to reach out, work with communities, carry out genetic testing and clarify risk.
Lastly, how receptive are they, Doctor, to that message?
It's coming along a lot. A lot of people, exactly as Wedge Streeting say, find the concept of marrying your first cousin troubling. And it's for two reasons. Firstly, is because there's a concern about coercion and choice for women. And the second one, people worry about the level of risk. Yes, there may be economic or social reasons. You've got to remember, 1 in 10 people in the world actually practice this type of marriage. So it is deeply ingrained in tradition and in communities. But we do worry about the coercion and the genetic risk. But, so we think that working with communities is the way to go.
But why can't we, lastly, Doctor, why can't we just ban it as they have in Norway and they're expected to do in Sweden next year?
Well, there's a number of concerns with that. So the first one is, what about people who are already cousins?
Mm.
What about the equivalent level of risk? If you have a child with autism, the recurrence risk is 1 in 10. We don't ban those people. If you've already got a child with a recessive condition, we don't stop them having further children, and that risk is 1 in 4, which is a lot more than 3% increased risk. So we don't ban people from having kids over 45. We don't ban people who smoke or drink in pregnancy. So there is an issue of equivalent risk and choice and education and options. We can mitigate a lot of this risk, and we could give a stronger message. And I think the balance of the message isn't right. My daughter sent me a meme saying 25 years ago, they told us not to smoke. Now they're telling us to marry our cousin. So that message is not right.
Enjoyed our conversation. Thank you, Dr. Julian Barwell, consultant in clinical genetics and honorary professor in genomic medicine at the University Hospitals of Leicester, 843. It's our conversation about migration, this policy which will be put forward by the Conservatives at their conference in Manchester that's got us talking. Darren's in Rochester. Darren, your view on what you've heard so far. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on again. I think it's purely a matter of political will. I mean, if you look at it as an extreme, on one extreme, we could say we're going to do nothing. And on the other extreme, which I know everyone's going to jump up and down, we could say we'll sink them in the sea and not allow a single person to come in illegally. That's just a matter of how far do we want to go down that extreme. But I would imagine if you had a referendum tomorrow and said, what do British people think about people, undocumented illegals, who we know nothing about? We know nothing about what they believe, their ideology, their culture. In fact, we probably do know quite a lot about that. But they're just pouring into this country. And currently, there's three times as many of them in this country than there are in the British Army. So we are going to have a big problem in a few years when we decide that to finally get on top of this, stop them coming across and start to deport them. We almost have something that's probably never been seen in the UK before in the terms of like a complete divide of people who are fighting with machetes and the unarmed police sitting there with their tasers. We're heading for this, and I mark my words, it's coming like a train, and it's about 2 years away. So I would be looking at the extreme and saying we need to be doing a little bit more of the unthinkable. But before everyone jumps up and down and says, oh, that's, you can't do that, you can't sink them at sea, if you did it to one boat and said we have zero tolerance for anyone coming across, I would pretty much guarantee that very few would even...
You might drown 50, 60 people.
Yes, and then thereafter, none would die ever. You would never hear of people dying
Darren,
at sea. You would
Darren,
never hear
Darren,
of it.
Darren,
yes,
who's,
yes.
Who's going to shoot the dinghy from under 60 people, some of whom might be women and children? I'm not.
Well, not many, hey. I mean, I think the numbers are not very many women and children coming across.
But I'm not going
to...
All right,
different.
OK, 60 blokes. I'm not going to fire, I don't know, whatever you want me to use, a harpoon or something, and watch 60 people die. Am I?
Wait. All right, so we'll wait for 3 years when we then have civil war on the streets.
No,
then we
I
have
don't
to
want
go.
That either, but... I hear what you're saying, and I'm all for getting tough, but you can't deliberately drown people.
Okay. All right, so that is an extreme. That is an extreme, and I will grant you that. But there's other versions. We could say to France, right? Sorry, at the international line, we're taking them to offshore processing,
yeah.
And we're going to send them to a foreign country because
yeah.
it didn't work when they arrived here. Because once they arrive here, we know the legal battles, and everybody jumps up and says, "Oh, you can't send them somewhere."
I know, I agree.
But if they don't arrive here and we send them back to France, France sends them to Rwanda. That would have worked just fine.
I can see that one working, but not shooting the boat from under them. Darren, thank you. Good to hear from you again. Darren's talking tough. And so is Shadow Chancellor Sir Mel Stride.
Low or mild depression, anxiety, ADHD, some of those conditions are resulting in people spending many years, in some cases their entire life, on benefits. And we don't think that that's right.
On the attack, the Tories, stopping people with anxiety, depression, ADHD, minor levels, receiving PIPs, personal independence payments. He'll hear from him and have more on that after this 8:46, just turned 8:46, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Mediators are due to meet in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of major reforms to the home buying system. And former England rugby union captain Lewis Moody has revealed he's been diagnosed with motor neurone disease. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, some outbreaks of rain in northern areas, sunny spells in the southeast, highs of 19 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still long delays on the western stretch of the M25 clockwise from before junction 14 at Heathrow to 16 at the M40, and it's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed. And also there are delays back onto the M40 as a result. Southbound it's slow from junction 2 at Beaconsfield. Also on the M25 it remains very busy anti-clockwise to the dot for tunnel after an accident that happened earlier. Queues on the A12 northbound heading up towards junction 12 at Mount Nessing just after the junction. A car was on fire earlier. The fire's now out, but it's still very slow. The North Circular Road also very busy southbound heading towards North Ealing. There's been an accident at Hillcrest Road. And on the underground, severe delays on the Victoria line.
This is LBC.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
This is LBC. Message Nick Ferrari on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It's just coming on 10 minutes before 9, so talking tough about how to control immigration, illegal migration into this country. Also talking tough about how trying to reform the civil service and other matters, the benefit system, to save plenty of money, billions of pounds. Let's turn straight to Conservative MP, Shadow Chancellor, Conservative Sir Mel Stride, who joins me now from the Manchester Conference. Good to have you on, Sir Mel. Just before we come to the work you'll be talking about, if I just take you back to yesterday, your party leader, Kemi Badenoch, was appearing on the BBC, and when asked where the 150,000 people who would be deported, where would they go, she replied, that's the least relevant question. Can you tell me where these people would go?
If they are here illegally, they will have come from countries of origin, and that is predominantly where those people would go to, Nick.
So a Syrian who is here and is to be deported, and they crossed on a small boat, they will be flown back to Syria?
If people have come to our country illegally, then they will be removed. That is the point that we're making.
Right.
And the 150,000 is an annual figure that we believe is achievable each year over a five-year period. Yes.
But why should the Syrians take him?
Well, there will be individual cases that may have particular aspects to it that will have to be thought through, of course. But the principal point here is that if people have come to our country illegally, they should not be here. They've come by an illegal route. They should be removed. And it's important that that happens, Nick, because if you have a situation where that isn't the case, then it just encourages more people to come. And that's not good for the country, but it's not good for the individuals concerned who are being exploited by gangs, and some people are dying in the channel. So we want to stop that trade in its tracks.
We will get to what you're going to be talking about. But just lastly on this, you honestly expect my listeners to believe a government that failed with its Rwanda plan is going to get 150,000 people out of the country every year, but you're not quite sure whether it's fully thought out? Seriously, Samuel?
No, well, I'm certainly not saying it's not fully thought out at all.
Well, how are you going to get Syria to accept them, Shadow Chancellor? How are you going to get Syria to accept them?
I did deal with that in the sense that clearly all individual cases have to be looked at individually, and you know you would have to work your way through each individual case in point. But the overarching point is that at a rate of 150,000, that's perfectly reasonable figure. We can have a real deterrent to prevent people coming into our country. On the point of Rwanda, of course, was never operationalised, Nick. It never became a deterrent because the flights never left, because there was a general election and Labour scrapped the whole thing. Had Rwanda proceeded, I'm absolutely confident, as we found with the Australians, and indeed as we found with the return arrangements we had in place with the Albanians, where the number of Albanians coming illegally dropped by 93% overnight, that would have worked. But it was never operationalised.
All right, let's turn to what we're going to hear from you today. Proposals that could save the country £23 billion. How do they work, Samuel?
So a lot of that, Nick, the £23 billion figure, in fact, relates to welfare reforms, and that's making sure that those that have mild mental health challenges, so that may be mild depression, anxiety, ADHD, etc., we feel that cash benefits are not actually the answer to those kind of conditions. That by far the better answer actually is to go into work. That's obviously good for the economy because you go from somebody on benefits to somebody who's in work and paying taxes. But equally, it is better for those people with those kind of conditions. The kind of routine that you get, the social interactions of work, we think are really important. And that and other measures that I'm setting out today will in total save £47 billion. And the reason we do that, Nick, is we've got to get on top of the debt in our country. It's going to be passed on to future generations, and it means we have an economy that's on an unsustainable trajectory, and the wheels will come off at some point. So we are the grown-up adult party that is now setting out not just lots of giveaways like Reform do. We are the party that is out there actually explaining how the debt will be dealt with.
How do you define mild mental health issues? Who makes that definition, Shadow Chancellor?
Well, you could have a distinction drawn on medical diagnosis. Clearly, if somebody has a medical diagnosis, that is for a severe mental health illness or condition, then that is very distinct from somebody, for example, who may be going through an assessment at the moment, saying that they are feeling depressed and rather anxious about life and being put on benefits. Often a situation that leads to them being on benefits for life. That is not something that is good for those kind of people in that circumstance.
And benefits for British citizens only, I read. Is that correct, Shadow Chancellor?
Yes, it is, with the exception of EU nationals, because we have treaty arrangements with the EU on that. But yes, we think that British citizenship should mean something. People can apply if they're here on indefinite leave for Remain, of course, for British citizenship. But those that are not UK citizens, we don't think, as a general principle, should have access to our welfare system.
So if someone who is on ILR and is in the process of application, would benefits be payable to them?
When you say application, you mean for you,
British citizenship. Yeah, would it apply to them? Would they be able to get?
Up until the point whether they got citizenship or not, then yes, it would apply to them. So it would be an encouragement, I suppose, for people to apply for British citizenship. And if that's what they wish to do and they meet the criteria, then, of course, we're a welcoming country.
If they don't apply, then they're not eligible for benefits, just to clarify.
Absolutely right, yes.
You also say £8 billion will be saved by trimming back the civil service. That's an eye-watering sum. How many jobs would have to go?
So we've gone from, in 2016, over 300,000 civil servants up to about 517,000 today. That's a 37% increase. We would be going back to the number we had in 2016 before the pandemic. The pandemic was one of the big reasons why there was an increase in those numbers. We're no longer facing that situation. We had Brexit as well, which boosted numbers, and that has now passed through. It is perfectly reasonable to get back to a civil service the same size of 2016. The state did not fall apart at that point, and that would save, as you say, £8 billion.
So lastly, talking tough about the civil service, talking tough about immigration, you're just reform light, aren't you? You've been bullied into this by the success of Nigel Farage and how far ahead of your party he is in the polls, Shadow Chancellor.
Not at all. There is huge, clear blue water between us and reform, particularly, for example, on the economy, where what Nigel Farage is doing is going out there, telling everybody what they want to hear, that he'll take everyone out of income tax up to £20,000, for example, something that would cost an eye-watering £80 billion, according to the IFS, about half what we spend on our health service with its 1.5 million workers every year. But no plan as to how he's going to deliver or fund that. Totally and utterly irresponsible. What we're doing here today is not coming out with lots and lots of giveaways. We are explaining exactly how it is we're going to make big savings so we can do the responsible thing and get on top of the debt that this country has.
Grateful for your time ahead of your speech at the Manchester conference. Thank you, Shadow Chancellor Sir Mel Stride. 3 minutes, 2 minutes, I'm sorry, 2 minutes before nine. Lisa in Camden talking about the migration policy as outlined, 150,000 people a year. How likely is it to work? Lisa, what do you take from that? Good morning.
Well, I don't agree with any of the sort of all of the proposals given. I think what we're failing to think about is some of the technologies we have.
Okay.
You can't tell me that we can go all over the world, prosecute wars all over the world with drone technology, and we can't spot dinghies en route.
We can spot the dinghies en route, but once they've set out, what do we do?
No. But the point is, instead of having conversations about returning people, we should be having conversations about policing, helping, supporting these countries to police their waters. And as these...
They don't want to police their waters, Lisa. They just want to push the boats out from Calais.
Well, before you even get to Calais, when you were talking about Spain, where from, I think, places like Morocco, where the journey begins, and making sure we provide the support there. It's not the French problem. We need to be engaging...
Why should we spend money in Morocco?
Well, listen, it's either you spend the money there, or you spend the money there, or you spend the money in France and the UK, where it becomes 10 times more expensive. There are more creative ways to address this. And the biggest problem around migration, if indeed there is a migration problem, is legal migration.
Lisa, you got your points, and I'm grateful that you held. The music means we have to move on. Coming up after the news, don't use our flag to divide us. Former England star Gary Neville.
The division that's being created is absolutely disgusting. Mainly created by angry, middle-aged white men.
It sounded like a cannon going off there, didn't it? Plus, the idea, as we heard outlined by a government minister, to try and ease the pain of buying a house or indeed selling a house. Tell us some of the nightmare stories you had in that particular area. Those stories and more will follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, mediators are due to meet in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The latest diplomatic efforts come after Hamas agreed to parts of a plan put forward by President Trump. He's urged those involved to move fast, warning that bloodshed will follow if a deal isn't agreed. Efrat Makinkawa, whose relatives were previously held by Hamas, says she's glad that Mr. Trump is pushing for peace.
Is very determined in making a real plan, understanding it's not only about the humanitarian crisis, it's also about the stability of our region. We all hope all the families will have some kind of a closure.
The Conservatives will promise to reward work by giving young people a tax rebate of £5,000 towards their first home when they get their first job. The Shadow Chancellor, Samuel Stride, will make the announcement at the party's conference in Manchester later. The move will be funded by cuts to public spending worth nearly £50 billion over 5 years. Samuel has just spoke to Nick and told him his party is determined to regain its reputation for fiscal responsibility.
We've got to get on top of the debt in our country. It's going to be passed on to future generations, and it means we have an economy that's on an unsustainable trajectory, and the wheels will come off at some point. So we are the grown-up adult party that is now setting out not just lots of giveaways like Reform do. We are the party that is out there actually explaining how the debt will be dealt with.
The government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of reforms to the home buying system. Changes include asking sellers for more information up front so buyers don't need to pay for searches and surveys. The shake-up aims to cut costs, reduce delays and halve failed sales. The Rugby Union World Cup winner Lewis Moody has revealed he's been diagnosed with motor neurone disease. MND affects nerves found in the brain and spinal cord, affecting the ability to move and talk. The former England captain says the news has been a huge shock, but is focused on staying positive. And Jaguar Land Rover is expected to restart some of its production in the UK this week. All manufacturing was paused at the end of August after a major cyber attack. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 22 at 94.70. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Rain in northern areas, sunny spells in the southeast with highs of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Okay, that's six of the ragu and the linguine. Make a move, everyone, please.
The customers are rolling in at Stefano's new restaurant, so he needs another chef. Someone with a cool head and an appetite for success.
More flour in the bechamel, let's go.
Indeed can help him find great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Sponsor a job on Indeed to unlock more tools that save you time and help you hire quality candidates. To start hiring, visit Indeed.com/try today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Monday, October the 6th. Coming up in this hour, when you see the Union flag or the cross of St. George, what do you see? Former England star Gary Neville sees in part angry middle-aged white men who put the flags up there. Do you agree with that? In news broken within the last few minutes, the French Prime Minister resigned. Less than a month in office. I remind you, that's the Prime Minister, not President Emmanuel Macron, who is now the most unpopular he has ever been, and the most unpopular French president in decades. We'll cross the channel to get more details on that. Plus, are you trying to sell or trying to buy a house? You'll know what is often the nightmare. Well, the government are determined to try and shake it up, as explained to me by Communities Minister Miatta Fanbulla.
We'll cut the process down by 4 weeks. We'll critically reduce by half the number of failed transactions. And critically, we'll deliver £700 savings for first-time buyers.
Plus, cutting down on your PIPs, personal independence payments, if you have mild disabilities, anxieties or disorders. How will they actually determine that? Well, Shadow Chancellor Samuel Stride told us in the previous hour
that those that have mild mental health challenges, so that may be mild depression, anxiety, ADHD, etc., we feel that cash benefits are not actually the answer.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Former Manchester United and England star and now broadcaster. And by the way, I want to say now, supremely gifted broadcaster. He's a tremendous broadcaster. I don't know if he's quite broadcasting on the right message here. Gary Neville sees and blames angry middle-aged white men for creating rifts in our society. The pundit says the public is being turned on each other in a video posted on social media. Enough from me. It's fairly lengthy and we think you should probably hear it in full.
So I've just left my house. And then walking into the office, waking up obviously, seeing the news last night and the news this morning dominated by the horrific attacks within the Jewish community, just about a mile from here. And was driving home from Salford City last night, I was driving actually to Salford City, going down a Littleton Road, seeing 60, probably 50 or 60 Union Jack flags. And on the way back, I went down the parallel road, which is Berry New Road, which has got the Jewish community right at its heart. And they're out on the streets, defiant, not hiding or in fear. And I just kept thinking as I was driving home last night that we're all being turned on each other. And the division that's being created is absolutely disgusting. Mainly created by angry, middle-aged white men who know exactly what they're doing. Funnily enough, on one of my development sites last week, there was a Union Jack flag put up, and I took it down instantly. And some people might be watching this and thinking, well, Gary, you're not very patriotic. I played my country 85 times. I love my country. I love Manchester and I love England. But I've been building in this city for 15, 20 years, and there's no one put a Union Jack, a Jack flag up in the last 15 to 20 years, so why do you need to put one up now? It's quite clearly it's sending a message to everybody that there is something you don't like. The Union Jack flag being used in a negative fashion is not right. And I'm a proud supporter of England, of Great Britain, of our country, and we're championing it anywhere in the world. It's been one of the greatest places to live. But I think we need to check ourselves. We need to check ourselves and sort of start to think about bringing ourselves back to a neutral point, because we're being pulled right and left, and we don't need to be pulled right and left at all. I've always said this about, I played in a football team with a group of people from Manchester, a group of people from Ireland, Wales, Scotland, but also people from Africa, people from Asia, people from America, people from Europe, and we were a beautiful team, united as one. Brexit has had a devastating impact on this country, and the messaging is getting dangerous, extremely dangerous. All these idiots that are out there spreading hate speech in any form and abuse in any form, we must stop promoting them. We must stop elevating our voices towards them. And it needs to stop now and get back to a country of love, of peace, of harmony, and become a team again.
So that was Gary Neville. So is he right on with his message or right back at the back of the class? David Wooding, political commentator, served as political editor of The Sun on Sunday and edited The Sunday Express, joins me now. Do you see messaging that's dangerous, David? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think Gary Neville's turned me into an angry, white, middle-aged man. I mean, the timing of this couldn't be worse. He posted this comment just 24 hours after a terrorist attack on a synagogue in his hometown, and barely days after the Labour leader, the leader of the party he's supposed to support, issued flags to members of his cabinet to wave in an attempt to try and reclaim the flag. Look, we should be allowed to fly our own flag proudly. And blaming the flag for our troubles is nonsense, frankly, Nick. I mean, the division in this country is being caused by people waving Palestinian flags and shouting for the globalization of jihad, or for people launching terrorist attacks on a minority group in our community. That's where the division's coming from. And we should really be proud to fly our flag as they are in other countries.
You've touched on this. How much does this put him at odds with Sir Keir Starmer, the party leader and Prime Minister?
Well, I think it does. I think he should stick to waving the red and white flag of Manchester United, who need all the help they can get right now. Keir Starmer really did say, he was quite strong on this, that we should never surrender the flag to hatred. There's a piece in the Daily Star this morning showing the demonstrations, and there was a demonstration about migration, but there was a counter-demonstration, and there's a picture of a woman wearing some kind of headdress, maybe a jihad or something like that, holding up an English flag, and it says, "The flag is ours too. What refugees welcome here." That's the sort of spirit we should be having, and we shouldn't be afraid to raise the flag. We certainly shouldn't be dragging them down if somebody's flying them.
Lastly, we're being pulled to the left, we're being pulled to the right, says Gary Neville. As a political editor of long standing, do you see any pulling going on from either side?
We are being pulled a lot, Nick, and I think this is down to the failure of successive governments to get a grip on the issues that matter to people, migration being one of them. But we had 14 years of Tory failure, 15 months of even worse from the Labour Party, and people don't know where to go. And I think social media is playing its part because people on the extreme fringes of politics are having their say and it's all being whipped up. So, yes, there is a lot of division at the moment.
David Wooding, political commentator, former political editor for The Sun on Sunday and editor of The Sunday Express. Thanks for your input on that to set us on our way of thinking. Ashley's in Beaconsfield. Ashley, your take on what Gary Neville is saying, or, of course, what Gary Neville is implying. Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Gary Neville's implication that this level of division is down to white middle-class men is, quite frankly, horrific. I'm absolutely apoplectic with his comments because I think they're clumsy, I think they're ill-thought, and also they come at a time where division is ridiculously high after what happened on Friday. Ridiculous comments from Gary Neville. Ridiculous.
When you see...
Sky need to sack him.
Well, I don't know if we go that, for goodness me. I think it was enough people called Gary have been sacked by broadcast. I don't need another one going. When you see the Union flag or the cross of St George, what do you see? What goes through your mind?
For me personally, it's something that... It is a touchy subject, but for me, it does show patriotism for this country. It does indicate that that's the flag of our country. Now, whether people run around central London or other cities here and shout racist abuse or, you know, whatever it might be with far-right demonstrations, then that can't be helped. But equally, Nick, I think you can twist it and say, what do people see when they see the flag of Palestine? Do they see a nation that's being suppressed, or do they see anger and rage and whatever else comes with it, hate marches?
Ashley, thank you. Have a good day. Let's go to social media and text. John says, these so-called white, middle-aged, angry men bought season tickets and shirts and kept you in a job, you idiot, says John in Smithfield. Excuse me. Nicky in Kent, I thoroughly agree with Gary Neville. I'm afraid everything went downhill since Brexit in this country. It opened a Pandora's box. It's okay to be xenophobic or racist. All you had to do to contradict him is a white, middle-aged man. You're from The Sun and The Daily Express. I think you mean The Sunday Express, which are read by middle-aged, angry men. Of a heaven to read this out. I rather missed the end of that, but I know I can sense you're angry with me. That's like a previous marriage. I can't quite work out what she's saying, but I know she's furious with me. Joe, Gary Neville is spot on. He might have been the best of fullbacks. I thought he was pretty good, wasn't he? But he's definitely hitting the nail on the head regarding the raising the flags. A far-right driven campaign to divide communities and recruit patriots to the far-right. Pride transcends the left-right political spectrum. It's not a thing that is owned by the right. We on the left are proud of our country, proud of the people who keep our communities together, who work hard and contribute in many ways. We'll be proud of our flag when we've got a government that will end homelessness, house veterans and everyone who needs it, and reduce wealth inequality. I don't know that they're not all go together, but if you're that proud, why does a flag get you that angry? And is it really fair to say that it's all down to angry middle-aged white men, to cite Mr. Neville? We'll have more on that. Also, after news, we cross the channel.
French Prime Minister Sébastien Lecornu has resigned. I'm Peter Allen, reporting for LBC in Paris.
Yes, you'll hear more from Peter later in this hour. It's 9:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Mediators are due to meet shortly in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. France's new prime minister has resigned less than a month after being appointed, and the government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of reforms to the home buying system. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most. Some outbreaks of rain in northern areas. Sunny spells in the southeast. Highs of 19 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still long delays on the western stretch of the M25 clockwise from junction 14 at Heathrow to 16 at the M40. It was after a car was on fire earlier. It's having a knock-on effect to the southbound M40, which is slow from junction 2 at Beaconsfield. Also on the M25, very busy anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel after an accident, but all the lanes are back open. In Sydenham, it's slow on Perry Hill, southbound. A bus has broken down. The North Circular Road's very slow, southbound to North Ealing, and that's following an accident at Hillcrest Road. And on the Underground, there are still severe delays on the Victoria line and also minor delays on the Bakerloo, Central and Jubilee lines.
LBC.
Can you hear that? It's the sound of billions of live cultures in Activia Kefir, our most diverse mix made with 16 strains, including probiotics, plus calcium. Because when your gut feels good, you feel good. Activia Kefir from Danone. Calcium contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. Live cultures and yogurt improve lactose digestion of the product in individuals with difficulty digesting lactose. Enjoy as part of a balanced diet and lifestyle. Activia, your gut is where it all begins.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, Tom and others coming to your calls concerning Gary Neville. No shortage of views coming in on that. But let's pick up on what would seem to be, how many times do we say this? Another political crisis in France with the Prime Minister Sébastien Lecornu resigning. I've got it down as less than a month in job. What was it? The lettuce and the Daily Star and Liz Truss? I don't know what the French is for lettuce, but have we got another one on our hands? Peter Allen, LBC's reporter in Paris. Bonjour.
Oui, bonjour, Nick. Yes, Sébastien Lecornu, he is the seventh Emmanuel Macron Prime Minister logo to be got rid of, let's put it that way. He says he hasn't been sacked. He says he's resigned. We all believe him because he announced a new government last night, extraordinarily on a Sunday night. He chose to announce his new government. A lot of people thought he did it because he could keep the news under the radar and he wouldn't get much criticism. He got masses of criticism, not least of all by the incumbent interior minister, Bruno Retailleau, who tweeted this morning that the new government wasn't good enough. Can you believe that? His own interior minister said that it wasn't good enough. It wasn't a rupture with the past. It wasn't a break with the past. It was the same old, same old. Meet the new cabinet, same as the old cabinet, I think we might say. And he's gone. It's absolutely extraordinary. He'll be speaking in about 30 minutes to say exactly why he's gone, but couldn't take the pressure. And Emmanuel Macron's administration completely plunged into crisis. We keep saying that, Nick.
Yes.
But he really has got huge problems at the moment.
In a sentence or two, lastly, what happens now? What will he do?
He'll have to find somebody else.
It's going to be your turn soon, Peter. It must be.
It won't be long. I'm next on the list. Yes. Yes. He'll try and find somebody. He'll try and deal with the crisis, but he's really got his work cut out, Nick.
Peter Allen reporting from Paris, LBC's reporter in Paris. Peter, thank you. Busy man. I know you've got a lot of broadcasts coming on. Thanks for coming on. All right, let's have a couple of emails and coming to your calls or texts. This is from John in Birmingham. Gary Neville, white, middle-aged, multimillionaire, doesn't have a clue. Yes, there are extremists, but there's a huge number of people, not just white and middle-aged, who are sick of our country's values being trashed in favour of no values. This comes from, have you signed it? Yes, Andrew Meppham in London, as opposed to Andrew London in Meppham. Our flag is a flag of unity. What a load of tosh from Gary Neville. If the flag does not represent you, then what does? Tom's in Melksham. Tom, what do you want to say to this? Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hello.
So I agree with Gary Neville to some certain stances. I think the flag is being used to tell a lot of nationalities that they're not welcome here. And I agree with showing the flag and supporting your country, but showing your flag to tell other people they're not welcome and use it as...
How is it telling people they're not welcome? How do you know the people who put the flags up on Bury Road in Manchester are telling people they're not welcome?
Because they don't like the migration or immigration coming in. They are...
But how do you know that's why they put the flags... How can you attribute whatever the emotional setting was of those people who decided to run flags up flagpoles? How do you know why they're doing it?
But the original reason why the flags were put up was because they were taken down in Birmingham, right?
And yes, and elsewhere.
So then they were put back. Put the English flags were then put up everywhere else to show a solidarity against that. But I think that there's just. There are, and it's not everyone agrees, but I think that it is being used as a platform, especially by the likes of Nigel Farage, to push his agenda. And like Gary Neville said, he is splitting the country to get in power. And I think if he does get in power, I really fear for the future. I've got a 2.5-year-old, and we've just had twins. And it scares me to death to think that he's coming in and what he would do to this country and how we would just become so polarised.
All right. Tom, thank you. I will respect your position. I don't know that I'm fully on side with all you're saying, but thank you for your input. Leroy in New Malden. Leroy, what would you say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, Leroy.
First-time caller. Thanks. I'm really glad I've got to. Nick,
yes.
I've heard the previous... I live in New Malden. There's flags being put up around Muslim shops, and for no other reason. You tell me why they're putting flags outside Muslim shops.
I don't know who's putting them. It might be the Muslim shopkeepers themselves. I don't know.
Nick, 100% Gary Neville is right.
Right.
The flag is causing people upset.
It's not causing me upset.
Of course it's not, Nick, because you're not black.
Oh, I see. I see. So most black people now get upset when they see a flag.
Nick, if I gave you a box of chocolates
and
you didn't want them,
and
if it causes you upset that I've given them to you, it's caused you upset. I'm not saying everything.
Well, I'm not going to go mad about you giving me a box of chocolates, though. Gift it. What is it called? Passing on? I don't know.
What I'm saying, Nick, is when a flag upset someone, if would you know when you put something up that's upsetting someone?
Right. But why do we live in a country where people can fly the Palestinian flag on the weekends, and good luck to them, because they believe in Palestine, as many people do, but they can't, but the minute you put a union flag up, you're being, I don't know, divisive or racist. How does that come about?
Nick, I'm not saying about racist or divisive. What I'm saying is, if that flag, and you knowingly, is put outside, like the whole street, no flags.
No, but hold on. You don't have to watch it, but I do. The party political conference. Do you recall how the Prime Minister ended his speech in Liverpool last week? Do you remember what happened?
Yeah.
So all his senior cabinet ministers were waving either the Union flag, the Welsh flag, the Northern Irish flag, or the Scottish flag. So are they all in some way, I don't know, racist or trying to upset black people?
Nick, I've never said they're racist. What I'm saying,
all right, no, upsetting black people. Okay, are they upsetting? Why would they knowingly upset black people? All those cabinet ministers.
Nick, I'm driving down the road.
No. Answer that question, because you've already given me a box of chocolates, and thank you very much. I don't want to talk about driving down the road. Never mind, no driving around the road about it. Are those cabinet ministers, indeed, some of whom happen to be black or non-white? So Shabana Mahmood, David Lammy is deliberately upsetting black people by waving flags.
He's not deliberately upsetting someone because they're actually at a conference. What I'm saying to you, what you're failing to see is, a whole street, there's no flags, and there's just one particular section, and this has happened, it's in Motspur Park, it's in Tolworth, they're strategically put up. Now, if you're telling me that all the shopkeepers have decided, oh, we're going to put these up today.
No, no, you haven't answered my point, though, about what you say this is to upset black people. Why would David Lammy wave a flag?
You did say it upsets
black people. You did.
It does upset black people.
So answer my question, sir. Answer. Why would David Lammy deliberately upset black people?
I said he's at a conference.
Right.
And at the conference, look, when I wave my English flag and I'm watching football, that's absolutely fine. What Gary Neville is saying, and I'm sure you listened to it.
I did. It's strategically
done. Those flags are 100% placed in an area to cause upset.
Well, let's hope they don't. Leroy, I've enjoyed talking to you. Look after yourself in New Malden. Craig's in Romford. Craig, you're on the radio. Your view. Good morning.
Thank you, Nick. That comment from Gary Neville when he talks about his angry, white, middle-aged man. I'm white. I am 51, so I think I class myself as in that bracket. I'm more angry at him for saying that than anything else.
Right.
I'm someone that has my Union Jack in my garden. I have the St. George Cross in my garden.
When you say in your garden, what do you mean, actual flags or like floral displays?
Yes, no flags.
Okay.
I have floral displays in the front of my garden that has the Union Jack and red, white and blue artificial flowers.
And why do you feel that so keenly, Craig?
I feel it keenly because I feel that for many years now that we've been told that our country is so bad, colonialism was so bad, and I think that I see so many. I live in London, or in Romford, just outside London. We have a road in Bethnal Green called Cambridge Heath Road that every lamppost had the Palestinian flag on.
Right.
And
but what about if you're deliberately upsetting black people, as Leroy just suggested? Would you want to do that?
No, not at all. It's about me having pride in my country.
Right.
That's what my flags are about. It's about having pride in my country. Nothing to do with anything else.
Don't go. I want you to speak to Richard in Chesterfield. Richard, what would you say to Craig? Because you agree with Gary Neville, I think. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I do agree with Gary Neville, yes. At the beginning of the campaign, when it was a protest against the Birmingham Council and others taking flags down, I thought, yeah, I can see your point, didn't join in on it. But then once the likes of Tommy Robinson and Nigel Farage felt that it was putting wind in their sail and they were then using it as a symbol of people becoming united for their cause and their way of thinking, at that point I was absolutely out. No,
well,
definitely.
Craig, you're supporting those sort of policies is what Richard would say. What would you say to him, Craig?
What I would say is that people like Nigel Farage, people like Tommy Robinson, are just proud and pride of their country. Ooh. And when people say that they're this or that, we need to see what happens when Nigel gets in. But what we need to really consider is, why can't we in Britain, British people, raise our flag just for the sake of being proud in our country?
Richard, why can't he do that?
We've not raised a flag, and I'll tell you my circumstance in Chesterfield where the flags went up everywhere. They went on every lamppost in our street. And the minute that you challenge those people putting the flags up, I can tell you in the Chesterfield area that the few that I've met are not very welcoming, and they are Reform supporters.
Not very what? Did you say well-to-do, did you say?
No, they're not very welcoming.
When you approach them and ask them
why they're doing it. My neighbour got into an altercation with one when he said he didn't want it flying outside our house, and it becomes a massive argument, and people say, yeah, I've had friends say to me, you know, why do you hate the flag? Why aren't you patriotic about this country? I love the country, like Gary Neville. I love the flag. Raising the flag and it being used and weaponised by Reform and Tommy Robinson is the point at which I draw the line.
All right. Craig, thank you. Richard, thank you. Probably important to say, of course, not everyone who's put up those flags is necessarily not particularly welcoming or like that. It might be people who just want to celebrate their country, but we will stay with this. Also, the government determined to try and make selling and buying houses easier. What are the nightmare stories that you can tell us? It's 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Time for the news, Dominic Ellis.
Negotiators from Israel and Hamas are preparing to hold talks in Egypt about ending the war in Gaza. The latest diplomatic efforts come as, after Hamas agreed to parts of the 20-point peace plan put forward by President Trump. The government's proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of major reforms to the home buying system. Under the changes, binding contracts will be introduced to stop either party walking away late in the deal. And France's new prime minister's resigned less than a month after being appointed. Sébastien Lecornu had been facing the threat of a vote of no confidence by rival parties. LBC weather cloudy but dry for most. Some rain in northern areas but sunny spells developing in the southeast with highs of 19 degrees.
LBC.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. There's over £2 million worth of cash prizes to be won. And a chance to get your hands on some epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items. App may be required. May depend on winning moment. See mcdrules.co.uk.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Right, let's get into these proposed changes as regards the buying and selling of houses, supposedly saving you £710, supposedly trying to reinvigorate a sluggish housing market. Now, it was in the first hour of the show. I was joined by Communities Minister, Miatta Van Buller, and she explained just exactly what this shake-up will comprise.
This is the biggest shake-up of the home buy and seller market that we've seen in a generation, that we think will cut the process down by 4 weeks, will critically reduce by half the number of failed transactions. At the moment, failed transactions are costing consumers collectively about 400 million, industry about a billion, and critically will deliver £700 savings for first-time buyers.
What is the number of failed transactions, Minister?
So at the moment, we have about 1.2 million transactions a year, but 400,000 of those are failed transactions. We think that these reforms will drive it down to about 170,000.
And typically, why do they fail, Minister? What are the causes?
Well, so our reforms are trying to get to the causes. So the first is there isn't always upfront information about the property. So one of the things that we are proposing is to require sellers to provide all the information, including the home conditions survey, so everyone knows where they are at the start of it. The second thing, once that's in place, we want to move towards binding conditional contracts at offer stage so that both parties are locked into that process going forward. But we also know that the process is really archaic, it's really fiddly, it's really complicated. We want to streamline all of that, and critically we want to make it digital. And then there is a big onus on estate agents to make sure that they are playing their part in getting the process right. That's why we want professional that, including having qualifications for estate agents.
So when you talk about binding, for the purpose of debate, I make an offer of a property for £500,000, which is accepted. That's it. No more gazumping. No more I pull out at the last minute. Is that broadly what we're getting at, Minister?
Yes, that's where we're getting at. And that's what we see elsewhere. For example, in Scotland, we know that it works, and critically, we know that it pushes down failed transactions, which is a thing that's really costly, both for sellers, cost them about £800, but an absolute nightmare for buyers as well.
It's been a long time since I bought a house, but I do know that in Scotland, effectively, your word is your bond. If you put in an offer and it's accepted, that's it. You can't suddenly say, do you know what, we've changed my mind, or my wife doesn't like it, or my husband doesn't like it. You're in. You've got to make the payments. But will they make much impact? And what are your nightmare stories about trying to buy or trying to sell? Spencer in Tower Hamlets. Spencer, what can you tell me? Good morning. Ah, you are in this industry, I note.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, we have an estate agent that that operates across London, Kent and Essex.
Oh, right. How's business?
Brisk.
Is it really?
It's pretty good. Pretty good time, to be honest.
What's selling at the moment? Starter homes, big homes, mansions? What have we got? Bungalows?
It's a bit of a tale of two cities, really. In London, it's first-time buyers are still quite active on properties below about 400k. And in Kent, we're seeing a bit of a shift for stuff that is north of 500k, the larger freehold family homes.
Okay. All right, and you do the whole of Kent, do you?
That's right, yes.
Okay, good luck with that. Right. You're at the front line, the coalface. What changes will these bring about? What do you hope would happen?
Well, I am, of course, supportive of any change that better protects our customer, our consumer, the buyer, right? I mean, quite frankly, going in to purchase a home or a property uninformed, without knowing exactly about the property, is crazy. In no other part of business or society do you go to buy something, negotiate on it, agree a price without being in full seat of the facts. So it's crazy, right? So yeah, I'm very glad, all of my team are very glad that we're going down this path of better informing the buyer, because it can only be a good thing. However, the devil, as usual, is in the detail. And particularly, I wanted to pick up on this subject of the surveys. Most mortgage companies won't accept a survey that's been done that hasn't been completed within a certain time frame. Mm-hmm. So if your house has been on the market, the survey's been done, and we're 6 months down the line, you can have the vendor may have to get a new survey. So there has to be quite a lot of joined up thinking here between the government and the banks and the mortgage lenders. Not worrying so much about her slightly flippant comment about the estate agent doing the right thing. We have to make sure that the government has got joined up thinking with the lenders to make sure that the process can be streamlined.
Had your advice been sought, as somebody who works in the industry, what would you have said to the minister?
Pretty much going down the route that we're going down, but we have to make sure that the banks are and the lenders are in line with accepting this sort of like universal survey. And also, if I can add a wish list item, it would be to speed up land registry, because that is often something that slows us down. But the number one cause for fallouts for us is for the managing agents who take so long to get the managing pats out to the prospective buyer solicitor. It takes weeks, when really that, if not months, when really that process desperately needs to be streamlined, Nick.
How long have you been in this game?
27 years this year.
What's the biggest change you've seen in nearly three decades then, Spencer?
I think a real shift where our customers, be it, you know, landlords, tenants, vendors, buyers, are much better informed, which is only a good thing for the industry, really.
What's the name? Give yourself a plug, your estate agents.
Oh, thank you. We are Dockside Property Services, dockside.co.uk.
Good luck. Hope you do well and get lots of people in the homes they want and sell lots of houses for people who want to sell. Talking about Scotland, Elaine says it's not true. In Scotland, you can pull out at the last minute because there's no exchange process where a contract is signed. There's only a completion date. You pull out at any time before then. I'm terribly sorry, Elaine. I did take that from the minister, and I must admit, I always thought that. Brendan says, he doesn't say excuse me, but I do. We moved from Kent to Dundee last year. The buying process was so easy. It's like buying a car. No complications. It took all the pressure off. Martin's in Nasing. What do you want to tell me about buying or selling a home, Martin? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for allowing me to come onto your great programme. I'm probably quite qualified to answer this, because not only am I a solicitor of some 36 years standing, but I'm also trying to sell my own home. And I've been trying for the last 2 years to sell my own home. And I welcome some of the government's proposals. Obviously, upfront information, as the previous contributor said, is a must. My concerns with everything are as follows. It's going to be a digital system, so who's going to be responsible for looking after that system, given...
You mean data protection? Is that what you're saying, Martin?
Not just data protection. There'll be a lot of information contained in, a digital logbook. Who's going to be responsible if that's hacked?
Yeah, so it is protection. Obviously, I don't know, right? That's a fair observation. Yes?
So, the second one, I would
like to see tax, SDLT changed. It's too expensive for owner-occupiers. If the government were at a slip of a pen, change that, reduce it down, that would considerably change the market. Every time there's been a stamp duty holiday, the market has ramped up, transactions have increased. So that is an easy win, and the money which is otherwise not recovered under SDLT can be recovered.
Sorry, FDLT, just explain everybody what FDLT is.
SDLT, stamp duty land tax, so that's
right.
Purchase.
Oh, SDLT, sorry, right, sorry, I thought you said...
SDLT.
Yep. Right, okay.
And the third thing I would like to see is... it's a Latin tag called caveat emptor.
Buyer beware?
Correct, Nick, yeah. So I would like to see that reversed. So the onus is then on the seller, who obviously has lived and occupied the property for a number of years. The onus is on the seller to tell people what...
I thought you had to do that, lastly. I thought if you'd been in dispute with your neighbours over a hedge or something like that, there's now a legal requirement. I mean, I haven't bought or sold a house in years, so is there not that now?
There is, but it can be fudged. So caveat emptor would cover not just disputes, but also the condition of the property.
I will leave it there, Martin. All your experience as a solicitor is coming out on the radio, and I'm grateful to you. But I want to go back to this conversation about the flag. And interestingly enough, the next caller will be from Manchester, because we are talking about Gary Neville, Manzoor. But that's after I read from Bob in London. I was a British soldier. I'm a British black man. When you are in service, in a hostile environment and great danger, when you see the Union flag, it gives you a sense of comfort and a connection to home, your loved ones, and the culture you have. When you've lived through that, you understand the real meaning of the flag. Meanwhile, Christine says, I woke up recently one morning to find Bury Road, Bolton, and that's exactly where Gary Neville was talking about, I think, festooned with the Union flag. My immediate feeling was fear. I felt intimidated. The recent video meeting of the far right in London with far right figures from Europe and Elon Musk spouting fear is nowhere you want to see the flag waved. Manzoor is in Manchester. Manzoor, your take on what Gary Neville is saying. Good morning.
Hi, morning, Nick.
Hello,
hope
sir.
You well.
I'm good.
What
well,
a mess.
Yes.
Everyone needs to just relax, have a cup of tea, and a digestive biscuit.
Oh, I like that. I do like a digestive
biscuit. It's a nice start.
It's a good biscuit. It's an honest biscuit. I like an honest biscuit.
Nick, I'm a British Muslim. I'm Mancunian, born and raised.
Mm.
And everything that's going on is just crazy. It's just so sad at the moment. But the flag, for me, is it doesn't offend me. It never has. I've never had a conversation with my family about the St. George's flag or the Union Jack flag. There's never been... I'm 52 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's never, ever been a conversation. And an example I give is if I'm on holiday, for example,
mm-hmm.
and I need some assistance, embassy assistance or anything, not that I ever have,
mm.
but when I see that flag, I feel comforted. Just like you said, the serviceman, you know, Bob.
Yep. Yep.
You know, you feel that comfort. You feel safe. You feel reassured that I am safe. So it doesn't offend me in that way at all. And, you know, we have European Cup, we have football, Olympics, yep. World Cup. When you see the flags go up, the bunting up, there's a sense of pride, you know? There is a sense of pride.
What would you say to people like Gary?
Does offend me, the one thing that offends me is the people that put the flags up, but then they are doing Nazi salutes or not putting the flags up. I'll say using the flag. You know, I've seen videos where they're holding flag and doing the Nazi salutes and stuff. Mm. That is offensive to me. But the flags or people wanting to put flags up. But I say, Gary Neville, what the generalisation of white... What do you say?
Angry middle-aged white men.
Yeah, the generalisation, I think, is wrong. Because when you're generalising anyone and anything, you do go down the wrong path.
I have enjoyed our conversation. Manzoor, look after yourself up in Manchester. Enjoy having the Conservatives crawling all over the city. That'll be fun for a couple of days, won't it? We'll come back to this conversation, possibly with a bit of house buying in too, but it's 9:45 LBC News headlines now with Dominic Ellis.
Mediators are due to meet in Egypt for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at ending the war in Gaza. The government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of major reforms to the home buying system. And former England rugby union captain Lewis Moody has revealed he's been diagnosed with motor neurone disease. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for most, some outbreaks of rain in northern areas, sunny spells in the southeast, highs of 19 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the western stretch of the M25 clockwise to junction 16 at the M40. It was after that car was on fire earlier. One lane remains closed and it's slow from junction 14 at Heathrow. It's also causing delays on the M40 southbound where it's slow from junction 2 at Beaconsfield. Also busy on the M4 eastbound to junction 6 at Slough. Just after the junction, there's been an accident and one lane is closed for recovery. On the underground, there are still severe delays on the Victoria line and minor delays on the Bakerloo Central and Jubilee lines. Also, Northern Line trains aren't stopping northbound at Stockwell Station.
LBC's Make Some Noise.
This Friday is Make Some Noise Day, LBC's charity fundraiser helping brilliant projects right across the UK. And you can get involved with an exciting prize as you and a guest could be exclusively joining us behind the scenes at LBC. Start the day with a coffee and a Q&A with me, Nick Ferrari. Then grab your spot in the studio to watch James O'Brien in action and you'll meet him too. You'll get a private tour of the studios at Global from LBC to Heart, Capital and the Newsagents podcast before you catch up with Sheila Fogarty and hear about how she puts her show together. Then it's off for afternoon tea at the Soho House Hotel and you'll get two tickets to see James O'Brien's Full Disclosure live in London on the 19th of February. To enter this competition, text the word studio to 84850. That's studio to 84850. By entering, you'll have the chance to make a voluntary £10 donation, which will be added to your phone bill. 100% goes to LBC's charity Make Some Noise. You've got until 4 p.m. on Friday the 10th of October to enter. Standard network rates apply. You must be 18 or over to enter. For full T's and C's, including prize date restrictions, visit lbc.co.uk. Good luck! Make sure you stay with LBC this Friday for Make Some Noise Day and more ways to help our fantastic charity.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The new-ish Home Secretary now has peaceful protest in her sights. If that's the answer, what's the question?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new £1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions, min spend £60 and charges apply. Max saving £20, new customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Take advantage of the Kia Electric Car Allowance to drive the Kia EV3, this year's UK and World Car of the Year. Or the new EV4, the Times Electric Car of the Year 2025, with a range of up to 388 miles. Get up to £3,750 towards your PCP finance deposit contribution and 3.9% APR representative until the 16th of December. Search the Kia Electric Car Allowance today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Range based on test conditions and may vary. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
bigger shake-up in house buying in generations, is what the government is saying. Becky's in Northwood. Are you buying or selling? Which is it? Good morning.
Good morning. My daughter is trying to buy at the present moment, and it's an absolute nightmare.
Is it really? Is it a lot worse than when you and dad or you and your husband or whatever bought?
Absolutely. I bought 2.5 years ago, and it's changed completely. And the problem seems to be we have a wonderful solicitor, but he is caught in the trap of finding out about money laundering. And we spent the last 3 months trying to prove our money, basically.
Trying to prove, so, well, presumably, can you, I'm sure this is so old-fashioned, can't you show 6 months of bank statements or something?
No, you can't, because it's exactly, my daughter's got a lifetime ISA, which she's had for 10 years. And you've got to prove every £4,000 that you put in every year. So it isn't going, here is the money. It's, where have you got? So we're going through bank statements for the last 10 years. And it's completely like that. And if you've got that money anywhere else in an account, you sort of go, oh, well, I've proved my £5,000 or whatever. And they go, well, there's another £1,000 in your account. So you could use that, which is dirty, instead of the five we've proved, which is clean. So, no, you can't use any of that. So it's...
You know, while all this is going on, and your lovely daughter is trying to buy her house, the real frauds, people who are really committing fraud, are making it off with millions, and your daughter has stopped from buying a house for 100, whatever thousand, however many hundred thousand pounds.
Yeah, completely. And it's, all we're trying to do is toe the line, be as honest as we are, and we're complete. And I, as I said, our solicitor is fabulous. And he's explained everything to us, and...
So this isn't particular to your daughter's case. This is effectively the way the system runs now.
It's effectively how the system runs. It isn't particular to us at all, and I think this is what's holding up a great deal of sellers. It's been 3 months, and we haven't even got to looking at contents yet.
So should we be celebrating the revolution the government speaks of? give them a chance. They've only been in 14 months. I mean, if it does turn around for people like you, your daughter and others, surely that is a good thing, no?
Yes, it would be a fantastic thing, but I think that what they're saying, it isn't enough, that we need to look at the way that, we talk about money laundering and the way that the money is looked at. Otherwise, nothing moves. I mean, we haven't moved for 3 months, so... And we can't do anything about it.
And the vendor, the people your daughter's buying from, they're patient, they're sitting with it, sticking with it, are they?
At the moment, they're sticking with it, for which we are eternally grateful, but, yes, I don't know how long.
Oh, dear. Let us know how you get on. Give her, and it's so distressing, isn't it? They say that buying and selling is second only to divorce. Oh, sorry, death in the family, divorce, and then it's buying or selling a house, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's been quite stressful, but we're going to get there. So,
That's what I like. That strident and determined, defiant tone, we are going to get there. Give her the best wishes from me, Becky. It sounds an absolute nightmare. Thanks for your input on that. Adam in Macclesfield, are you buying or selling? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Nice to meet you. Do you know what? Interesting story, because I'm currently relocating from Scotland to Cheshire, and we've seen both sides of the system. So we sold in Scotland. We agreed a deal in Scotland on our property. You sign what's called missives, which is what people are referring to, which is kind of a legally binding contract that says, I've accepted your offer and you accept to buy the house.
So how is it different from the English system then, just briefly?
At that point, the only other difference, which I actually don't agree is a good system in Scotland, is a lot of the people like to go to blind bids. So you all submit bids, offers above what they're asking for.
Oh, right.
So you could miss out on a house for the sake of a couple of £1,000. Or you could be massively overpaying for a house.
Oh, that's
you're the
a
only
nightmare.
One bidding for. But however, once you get to the point where you've agreed an offer, that's when I think it's really much better set up for both parties, because you sign what's called a missives and you are now bound. So then the lawyers can start on getting all the legal contract drawn up and bring it to completion. But during that period, you can't change your mind. So from when we accepted our offer in Scotland, I had the money in my bank within 5 weeks. So they had no chain, we had no chain, we were done. On the flip side, we are now relocating to Cheshire. We made an offer on a house, which was accepted. Mm. 4 weeks down the line, it transpired that the person didn't actually even own the house that they were selling. So the agent, I heard you talking earlier about the agents not being qualified, not doing their due diligence. So we wasted a month on a property that wasn't even the person's to sell.
What, they were trying to get off with your money, selling a house they didn't...
Well, it wasn't actually fraud, in fairness. I think there was just some inconsistencies on ownership over the property.
So did they own it or not? Details.
No. It wasn't theirs to sell, basically.
So they were trying to flog it when they didn't own it?
Well, yeah, in simple terms. I won't go, I think the next one's more interesting. Yeah, the next one's more interesting, which is... We then, as of last week, we were 14 weeks into a sale, into a purchase.
Mm.
The seller, at week 14, despite the fact there was no chain, we were all just trundling along, the lawyers were doing their bit, obviously, to and fro in, taking lumps out of each other, elongating the process. After week 14, having spent 3 months in an Airbnb waiting to move into this property with all our stuff in storage, the seller decided that they don't want to sell the house anymore, so they pulled out.
Oh, for God's sakes.
So now we are left in an Airbnb, you know, and, yeah, we've obviously now, the difference in Scotland, obviously, the seller does all the home buyer reports, so it flags up all the issues. Obviously, in England, you pay for the home buyer report, we pay for the searches, you've got legal fees, you've got temporary accommodation, and then you're back to square one after 14 weeks. So it just kind of shows you both sides of the...
Where are you now? Have you got your sights on something else?
We're going to go into rented accommodation and take a bit of a breather, which is a shame. And ironic, yeah. So, just a really different system. So,
I'm grateful for all your input. Rent a house for a year, calm down, and then sort yourself out in March again. I think you've had enough near misses, mate. You need to do that. Thank you for that, Adam. Best wishes to you and your family. Let's talk about Gary Neville in his view of flying the flag. Sam's in Penge. Now, you want to talk about Blackheath in London, do you, Sam? Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning,
Hello.
I think... Obviously, you living in South London, you can understand the difference between Blackheath and Eltham.
Right,
Blackheath isn't very working class.
No, it's not.
Eltham's very working class.
Yeah,
the flags
class.
Popped up almost immediately in Eltham as soon as anybody started waving the Palestinian flag.
I haven't been through Eltham in ages, but I'll take your word for it, sir. Yeah, go ahead.
So,
because I can't think of any flags in Blackheath. I honestly can't think of any, unless I'm missing one.
There's the Union Jack outside the hotel in Blackheath waves every single day.
Yeah, but that's been there forever.
No one's ever protested about it. Why? Why is that?
So what's the point you're driving at, sir?
So the point I'm driving at is Gary Neville was talking about division and how disgusted he was in division.
Hmm.
And here we're talking about whether they're working, someone's upset or no one's upset. People are upset. It's causing division. We can see why it's causing division. We can see who's causing division and what their purpose of this division is. As soon as people started speaking up about Palestine, English people were led to believe that you're not allowed to wave your flag.
Mm.
You can wave your flag. You can wave your flag in Benidorm. You can wave your flag in Spain.
You can't on Gary Neville's building site.
Thank God. He doesn't want that energy on his building site.
Just said you can wave your flag, but of course you can't wave your flag if Gary Neville's busy taking it down.
No, Gary Neville doesn't want it waved on his site if it's being waved by
racists. So you can't wave it everywhere, Sam.
To the entrance of the building site, I'm sure they've got some sort of entrance.
You said you can wave it anywhere. You can't wave it anywhere.
I'm Albanian. I've got my flag in my van right now. It's lit up everywhere. No one's ever said anything to me about having an Albanian flag.
Well, I hope they won't. You're free to do that. My late father used to fly a Swiss flag because he was very proud of his origin there, and that's the way it should be. Sam, safe driving. Mate, see you next time you come across Blackheath, because we are done for today. James O'Brien will be the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning for Arm 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and any, concerns that the police had too much power to close down or indeed to curtail peaceful legal protest. They're going to be ramped up somewhat today because Shabana Mahmood, the relatively new Home Secretary, is considering, I think probably more than considering, even further restrictions on what you can and can't do by way of protest. And she introduces a new phrase, I think, to the discourse. The phrase is cumulative impact. Similar demonstrations happening in the same place on a regular basis, building up, unhappiness to the point where Shabana Mahmood may close them down.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From
On Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, negotiators from Israel and Hamas are preparing to hold talks in Egypt about ending the war in Gaza. The latest diplomatic efforts come after Hamas agreed to parts of a peace plan put forward by President Trump. He's urged those involved to move fast, warning that bloodshed will follow if a deal isn't agreed. The US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has echoed the president's call for urgency while speaking to the broadcaster ABC.
We're hoping it'll be finalized very quickly, early this week. And I'm hoping, you know, again, who knows the timeline, but this cannot take weeks or even multiple days. We want to see this happen very fast. If it doesn't, then I think the entire deal becomes imperiled. So this has to happen quickly.
The Shadow Chancellor will promise to save £47 billion of taxpayers' money if the Conservatives win the next general election. Samuel Stride is due to address the party's conference in Manchester shortly. He's expected to outline plans to cut spending on welfare and social housing. The government is proposing to cut costs for people buying property as part of major reforms to the home buying system. Changes include asking sellers for more information up front so buyers don't need to pay for searches and surveys. The shake-up aims to cut costs, reduce delays and halve failed sales. France's new Prime Minister has resigned less than a month after being appointed. Sébastien Lecornu had been facing the threat of a vote of no confidence by rival parties. The Rugby World Cup winner Lewis Moody has revealed he'd been diagnosed with motor neurone disease. The former England captain says the news has been a huge shock, but is focused on staying positive. MND affects nerves found in the brain and spinal cord, affecting the ability to move and talk. Tanya Curry is from the Motor Neurone Disease Association and has told LBC the causes are still not fully understood.
Some studies have shown a link between head injuries and contact sports with neurological diseases, but we don't know enough to say that's an absolute correlation. The scientists think there is some kind of combination between environmental, lifestyle and genetic factors, but we can't actually say, yes, it's that sport that causes this disease. But we also recognise we are seeing sportsmen coming through with these injuries.
Around 8,500 homes are facing a fourth day without power in Scotland after Storm Amy hit. Scottish and Southern electricity networks say engineers are working to restore supplies. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 16 at 94.47. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather cloudy, but dry for most today. Rain in northern areas, some sunny spells developing in the southeast with highs of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? Right, no more.
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies in a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10. Here's a little question for you to kick the week off. How effective is peaceful public protest? Seriously, I'm not going to lie to you. That question only just popped into my head, literally 6 seconds ago, so I haven't spent an awful lot of time trying to come up with examples of when it has been effective. But when we speak about public protest having the desired result, we reach often for the poll tax. But that was not peaceful. I mean, they were very sort of impassioned and I think violent. I'm much younger than I would need to be to speak with full confidence about what happened there in the sort of dog days of Margaret Thatcher's premiership. But it wasn't peaceful protest. I mean, you might think of Mahatma Gandhi, of course, when it comes to the power of peaceful protest, but I'm thinking chiefly of this country. I'm thinking chiefly of the United Kingdom. And I don't want to sound like a wazzock. And as I get older, I'm more conscious of how wazzicky some contributions to conversations may have sounded in my younger days. Yeah, protest is good. And we have been conditioned in this country to be suspicious of it. Did Swampy succeed? I guess another age-based inquiry. If you're of a certain age, you will remember there was a campaigner during a road-building exercise who sort of dug himself into a tunnel and refused to come out because the road-building exercise was going to destroy ancient woodland. And he was a fascinating character because the traditional corners of the right-wing media tried very, very hard to portray him as a weirdo, or bearded weirdo. And actually, he gathered quite a lot of public support and affection. I don't know whether it was down to him or whether it was because he was simply the focus for broader movements. But that's an example of peaceful protest that I think of. Except I think he was also breaking the law, even though he was simply sitting in a hole. There comes a point where if you have been ordered by the authorities to move, then most obviously you're trespassing when you say no. At Just Stop Oil, a noble cause, if you believe in science, obviously, a very annoying bunch of people if you don't believe in science. And that's not even funny anymore. If I'd said that 5 years ago, it would have been with my tongue in my cheek. But you've got the most powerful administration on the planet now demonstrating daily that it does not believe in science. Or it is so desperate to please the plutocrats that it will pretend not to believe the science while enacting legislation and pursuing policies that are in complete opposition to the observable scientific evidence. Swampy, what did I call him? Did I get his name wrong? What did I call him? It wasn't also, or maybe you're sending me the word Swampy in order to suggest things that have worked. Suffragettes or suffragists? I'm afraid I get them mixed up. One was legal, one was not. That was not peaceful protest. At times, even if the sacrifices made were of themselves, you think of the lady who threw herself under the hooves of a horse at the Derby and the chaining to railings, but it could end in force feeding. It could end in hose pipes being shoved down women's throats because they were on hunger strike. It's peaceful protest from the protesters' point of view, but it's not very peaceful from the authorities' point of view. So actually, I'll do that. Well, I mean, I'm getting some nice messages through, but I'll put that on the board. You can ring in with that if you want, the effectiveness of peaceful protest. Because the reason I used the word WASOC a moment ago is because I think it's probably linked partly to guilt or shame. I'm obsessed, or not obsessed, but fascinated by how much of what we are, how much of the bad bits of us are down to guilt and shame. It's not just because I was raised a Catholic, where they use guilt and shame essentially to control your mind, or at least to try to control your behaviour. But guilt and shame are huge drivers of human behaviour. I think if everybody understood this, or if everybody had a little bit of therapy, we'd be in a much happier place. It could be shame of not having lived up to your parents' expectations can still be driving people to do nasty things in their 60s. Guilt, an incredible driver. You're going to be horrible to someone over there for doing the right thing because you feel guilty about the fact that you can't be bothered. I sometimes think with protests that guilt, a lot of the negativity is driven by guilt and shame. Not if you're the thing being protested against or you're in support of the thing being protested against. I mean, those of us who sit in the middle sometimes. Why can you be so easily persuaded to hate on Just Stop Oil or to hate on Swampy and his mates or to hate on whoever it is that is protesting that? And partly it is either a little bit of guilt that you can't be bothered to do it yourself or a little bit of embarrassment that you don't feel things strongly enough. You sort of wish that your life, your inner life, was a bit richer. God, I wish I cared about something as much as you care about the environment. I wish I cared about something as much as you care about fossil fuels or whatever else it may be. You see it at the football. I wish I cared about issues as much as I care about football. Caring this much about football is just stupid. Why do I care this much about football? Don't know, don't need to know. But if I cared about other human beings, if I cared about the future of the planet, if I cared about appalling